This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skid of a rinky dinky dink.
Yeah.
Skid of a rinky doo.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I've wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth is crackly, Kate.
That's a bit much. You, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
God is great. Yeah. Yeah. God is.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your host, Just Rosero, coming with you live here on this Monday evening, back in the groove on our usual spot here. Scott Criscola, how are you doing?
I'm well, JR. How are you, sir? Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 405 of the Mothership.
I almost feel like it's like the old days, you know, just a back-to-back...
I know, just pounding them out, one after the other. And as we're, I think we're going to have to say, JR, when we get to the end of the calendar year 2016, this might be one of the most bizarre weather years in the history of, like, Saturday it was comfortable, actually a little warm. Yesterday, it's like 44 or something. Mm-hmm. Today, it's probably in the mid-60s, you know, still a little chilly, but it's not out of the ordinary, but it's like the wind was like 50 miles an hour, so... If you arsonists played today, I know you didn't, but if you did, I'm sure you would have had a miserable time trying to shoot in this weather because the wind was brutal. I don't know if it was brutal in your neck of the woods, but it was pretty rough down here today.
Yeah, it was pretty strong. Strong gusts blowing through.
Yes.
Yeah, not easy.
But no, not easy at all. But how have you been the last 7 days? Usually it's the last 14 days, but a pleasant weekend as always, I imagine.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I had some illnesses spreading through the... through the house, so that was a little bit tough. So, whiny one-year-old all weekend, so that's always fun. Not a lot of sleep, but
Big Al having tummy issues? Big Al?
Not tummy. So it was a little pink eye mixed with a little sinus infection. So,
oh god, it's a lot of schmutz.
Yeah. So it was, and you know, he's a baby about it. So it was,
he's supposed to be the tough old Guido in the family. Right. Come on.
So anyway, I didn't get a lot of sleep until last night, just in time for work, of course. But
yeah.
No, so there's a lot of that, and that's it. A lot of watching baseball, I guess. Mm-hmm. Try to think what else happened. I don't know. Oh, birthday party here and there. A horse, pony rides at this birthday party went on, and this horse was loaded, man.
We're talking like Sebastian on steroids?
Yeah, well, it looked like a little Sebastian, but it was packing heat down below, so it was, you know, it's funny watching that thing.
Just carrying a shotgun.
Walk around with four-year-olds on its back with that, you know, huge schlong hanging out between his legs. And then it stopped and shit on the grass. And one of the girls had to come clean it. And then it would stop and piss as the kids were on it. It was good. It was entertaining.
That sounds like a Seinfeld episode.
The Rusty. No, true. But it was good. And the actually, I was just talking to because my wife's been watching a lot of these shows on HGTV, all these home shows. I was actually just talking about this with some of the guys on our chat group. Some of these things like get out of control. I don't know how many of these you watch. Like, there's a few that have been around for a while, or a few that are okay, and then there are some that just go way over the top. Like, there's one now, this Love It or List It, where I guess it's this pair, this duo, where they make an offer. Like, one fixes up the house, and the other one, you know, works to find them a new house, and then they can sell after the work is done if they want to leave. But they were both, like, real, like, assholes. I don't know. Like, it wasn't nice at all. Like, they were jerks, and the contractor was a dick, and the couples on these things are just obnoxious. So, like I think Chad was saying, you know, oh, yeah, we can do $50,000, but we want, you know, all this stuff. And it's like, just, and they're bitches about it. It's just the entitlement. And I'm sure they're told to play it up, but I don't know. Some of these shows are just seem to be a little out of control.
Yeah, I've seen a few of them myself. There's one. I don't know if it's HGTV or if it's another channel. It's like a group. And then they pick these, you know, they all work together. They have different, you know, strengths, you know, carpentry and painting and, you know, plumbing and electricity. And then they have like the one appraiser or the one real estate person. And they, you know, they find this like utter piece of crap house that, you know, looks like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was, you know, filmed there. And then they fix it up. And then somebody makes a dumb mistake. Oh, let's paint the house neon green or something.
Right.
I understand the entertainment value of it, but I mean, at this point, those shows just all seem rigged. They just all seem rigged at this point. Like you're saying, nobody on any of these shows could live their life every day that douchey.
Right.
But then on that show, they're just, like you said, oh, I want $50,000, but I want, like, you know, gold faucet things. Go away. You know, this person, oh, they come from that house. You know,
well, then they do the, where they're walking and talking about, I don't know if we'll find us a place close to the city. It doesn't matter. You know, like, they're arguing.
Yeah.
It's like, clearly, it's just awful. The only good one, and Chad's on board with this one as well, is the Flip or Flop, only because the girl is the smoke show. And the it's an easier watch because it's just them with their team all the time. You know what I mean? They're not, like, there's no people that come in to buy the house or anything.
Right.
So it's just them fixing up houses and then flipping them. So it's more tolerable. You're not dealing with asshole people that come in looking for shit to get done for free or whatever.
Exactly. No, exactly. But those shows are getting old now. You know,
I think they're more than ever. Like, I feel like every time we look, there's like a new one out, and she watches it just constantly. I mean, like, it's even a joke with my daughter. Like, oh, mommy's watching her home shows or whatever she says. You know, it's just like just knowing that that's how it is.
Is she watching the new Chelsea show on Netflix? That's right up her alley.
I don't think she's watched it yet.
Yeah, there's three. There are new episodes. I haven't watched them. They just pop up on the, you know, when they go to the home screen. But I think it's every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, a new half hour. It's a talk show. It's like a, you know, her old talk show. Hmm. And I think Drew Barrymore was on the first one. And then
you should message her and let her know, because I'll probably forget.
I will.
But I know she's been looking for something, because we finished Kimmy Schmidt, and now all our other shows are ending. Oh, it's really funny. Yeah, I like it.
Is it? Yeah, I like I watch the Netflix shows are very good. I watch House of Cards. They just season five just four just ended. That show's fantastic. Kevin Spacey's the man. And then I watch obviously the cartoon shows for our men band, for Ben Morse. I watch both Daredevil and Jessica Jones, and I think there's another one coming out.
You say cartoon? Those aren't cartoons, are they?
I mean, not cartoon. I meant comic. Sorry, wrong C word. I meant comics. Comic book shows, Daredevil and Jessica Jones. But yeah, and then somebody I know watches Orange is the New Black. There's that new show. I don't know if you caught it. I think it's called The Ranch. It's Ashton Kutcher and what's his face from that 70s show? Danny, the hell's his last name? Masterson, the one that played Hyde.
Mm.
And I think one of the older actors, the father, and they all live on a ranch, and he was like the star quarterback who didn't make it in the pros, so he came back to the ranch to help, and it's a comedy, and I don't know, I think it popped up a couple months ago, but good for Netflix. I mean, hey, that's what's something that's got to hook people to get the you know, the streaming rather than just the DVDs. But
does anyone still get the DVDs? I didn't know.
I do. Oh, okay. I get one.
You're old.
Well, friggin' Rotella, I think, still gets three, but I think his wife had it. They have separate accounts. I think they have like seven DVDs at home.
No, they're nuts. I don't know. I don't know how they exist as a people.
I get the one a month, you know.
It's like it's a tribe that should probably be extinct. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how he's hanging on.
Until next Saturday.
I don't know how they're hanging on.
But I get the one a month because there are some movies I like. I want to get that aren't on streaming, but I'm tempted to ditch it. So, but I, you know, it takes me forever. I'll buy it and then I'll get it and then I'll just leave it on my top of my DVD player and Blu-ray. And if I remember there, I'll watch it. But okay. Mostly I watch MLB.TV and then Sling. Sling TV. For those that think that their cable and stuff is too expensive, highly recommend Sling TV. It's $20 a month base, and then you pay for, you know, extra packages as you go. And it's not that expensive, and the quality is very good. So if you think your cable's too expensive, the Sling TV is a good bargain. You don't get local channels.
Hey, what is going on here?
Oh, we're in the middle of something. Go away. Actually, JR, you may want to think about Sling TV because the Yes Network is on Sling TV, and I don't think that's under
yes.
Black. Huh?
I get yes.
Yeah, but aren't the Yankee games blacked out?
There's no way they're available on Sling. They can't.
No, you can get 7 days free and then cancel it. Give it a shot.
Never know. I get MLB TV anyway.
I know, but that you have to pay more for. Well, I guess depending who you get it from.
I pay for it, but I get every game, and it's fine. I'm all right. I'm a long-time subscriber.
Long time, first time, long time? Mm. Speaking of first time, long time.
It's not 19 Netflix DVDs, but I think, you know, it's okay.
Hey, they hit a shock wall with their Blu-rays.
Yeah. I'm going to give a shock wall, right?
Anyway, tonight, we're going to go back to 2000, continue our roll through 2006, where DVDs were prevalent.
Yes. How many shelves back then did you have? One?
I think he hit, what? How many what did I have?
I said, how many shelves did you have at that time? Just one?
Shelves. Oh, yeah, only one, because there wasn't a lot of DVDs. Two, maybe. Because a lot of good comps came out in 05 and 06. But we're on the heels of pretty good WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. But tonight, in the epilogue to the WrestleMania build, we have the sequel, apparently, to The Higher Power. Backlash.
Backlash. He's backlash.
Tonight, inside backlash. The Vintage Vault. Yes. Tonight, inside the Big Steel Box, we give you Backlash 2006. Another one of those shows that I think people probably forget about, like most shows in 2006.
Mm. Or try to figure it about, and then we bring it back into their consciousness, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, honestly, this might be one where we may have to stick back in the box and never take out again. But all right. April 30th. 2006, live from the Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky. Very unique venue this evening, JR.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the last time we've been on a college campus for a pay-per-view.
Have we ever?
I don't. Yeah. In fact, it has to do with this state, I think.
Gaz.
Gaz. This is the Bluegrass State's mm-hmm. fourth pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
And first since?
Judgment Day 2000.
Correct.
I'm looking right at it. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
But I did know that, actually.
And it's also the first pay-per-view held in the Commonwealth of Kentucky that is not in the city of Louisville.
Is Kentucky a Commonwealth?
Yes.
Really?
Kentucky, Massachusetts.
Seems like a big word for them. I'm not going to lie.
Kentucky, Massachusetts, Virginia.
Yeah, Commonwealth of Kentucky. All right.
There's one other one.
One of four states constituted as a commonwealth. Virginia, what else did you say?
Massachusetts.
Yep. Kentucky, and one more.
Hmm.
I think Brad.
Pennsylvania.
There you go. Originally a part of Virginia in 1792, Kentucky became the 15th state to join the Union. Kentucky is the 37th most extensive and 26th most populous of the 50 United States. And they're all related. Talking to you, Steve
terrible.
Williams. There you go. I learned something new today, so we're good.
So
we can close up shop. You taught me something new.
Here we go.
First time in 405 episodes. I've learned something educational from you.
And it is the fourth pay-per-view again in history. The Commonwealth State, of course, Judgment Day 2000. In Your House number 6.
In Your House.
Was the first one. Different buildings, too. That was at Louisville Gardens.
Mm-hmm. That was in Jim Cornette's gazebo, I believe, that one.
Yes. Yeah. And then the hell was the other one? Ground Zero? I think Ground Zero.
Yep. That sounds
Ground
right.
Ground Zero, Louisville Gardens. And then Judgment Day 2000 was actually at Freedom Hall, which was the old building for the Louisville men's and women's hoops before the
KFC. That's where Pacino banged the woman on the table, right?
Right? No, that was right. I know.
That's right before he paid the kids not to talk about it.
No,
that was when he ran the prostitution ring.
Well, that was right before he got the job, so he must have been doing it. I think this is when he was still with the Celtics. He might have been doing it, you know, in the TD Garden trainer's room or something.
doing it right.
Pretty historic building, JR. Why don't you give us the history of Rupp Arena?
Rupp Arena. Eruption Arena when Rick Pitino was there. opened in 1976, November 28th. Architect LRB Beckett. Tenants at Kentucky Wildcats from 1976 on the Lexington. Woo, yeah, baby, a four horseman of the AF2, 2003 to 2009. The Kentucky Thoroughblades of the AHL for 5 years. And the Lexington
Middle War
of the ECHL. Some interesting teams have gone through there.
I remember the Kentucky Thoroughblades. I remember them very well.
Holds 23,500 plus for basketball. So pretty big for a non-campus arena.
I concur. But, I mean, it is Kentucky. So
Adolf Hitler was, of course, the namesake. I mean, Adolf Rupp was, of course, the namesake.
Kind of. I mean, if you know the history of Kentucky hoops, we'll bring Reesh on. He'll give you a five-hour summation of it. No, we love you, Reesh. Your crowd on this night, 14,000. So big house, big crowd in Rupp. Your buy rate, 0.55. And your announcers at ringside, good old J.R. Jim Ross, stuck around. And Jerry the King Lawler.
Who?
A little bit about JR. JR.
Yeah. So for our second straight pay-per-view, Mr. McMahon decided to call Jim Ross off the sidelines to take control of the broadcast table, pushing Joey Styles off the show. Vince was not completely happy with the way Styles was calling Raw, but there are other reasons for the switch as well, and we'll talk about in a moment. But this officially marks the full-time return, pretty much, of Jim Ross to Raw and to the WWE. So, of course, had been kind of spotty since he was fired in October, or at least taken, you know, put on the sidelines back in October. And now he's back in the booth, so he's here, and he'll be here from here on out for a while. So,
yes, all right. Why don't you give us our Sutton report?
If I must, let's see here. So, do you remember the tagline? That should be right up your alley.
Long live the king.
Oh yeah. The song.
Kill Switch and Gate. No, that's the next show. Shit. No,
Baby Hates Me by Danko Jonas.
I remember Danko Jonas, but I didn't remember the song.
Sponsor?
Tops?
It was Tops. WWE Champion John Cena, 91st day of his reign. Shelton Benjamin, still your IC champ, 69th day of his reign. Tag Team Champions, the Spirit Squad, defeated Big Show and Kane on the 3-4 Raw. We'll talk about that in a bit. Kane and Show had 153-day reign as champions. Mm-hmm. Mickey James in day 28, of course, had won the belt back at Mania. The first Raw Scott to be held in the same arena as Mania the previous night. And, of course, I think it's the last, right? It's happened in the same state many or city many times since.
Yes, many times.
It's never been in the same arena since, right?
No, and if you watch the clips from it, which there are some today, or there were some on the pay-per-view, they didn't really do anything. They kept all the big pictures up on top.
Yeah, that was
the only thing they obviously did was switch the stage, obviously.
Right.
But obviously you can never do that again unless
Mania
changes.
Have they been in the same city since? I mean, have they, has everyone been in the same city? Like, when did that become the official thing?
Let me think. Pretty much since, I know 27, Georgia Dome, the next night it was at Phillips. 28 definitely was at American Airlines Arena.
I think at least since 27 we can confidently say.
Yeah, 29 obviously was at IZOD because that was the kooky night. 30 was 30 at the New Orleans Arena? That I don't know.
I think it was.
31 was,
it must have been around there.
I don't know where 30 was.
I'd say
and
so,
then
maybe 26.
This year, right.
Yeah, 26 was definitely in Phoenix, too, I think. Yeah, so it might have been everyone since this. 23 would be the one blind spot for me, but.
Yeah, well, 24 would definitely not be because I don't think there's. Oh, no, it might have been at the Amway Center in Orlando.
The arena.
Well,
why don't you look up 23 while I read through this?
Yeah, let me look up 23 because I don't know what building would be.
HistoryofDewey.com, of course. Graham Cawthon, check it out. On 4-4, actually, we had a couple of releases in April. Tyson Tomko was released from the company after a lack of role in storylines. 210 matches. He was 28-36-0 there. So his final appearance happened. And on 4-20, Palmer Cannon requested his release. He was a victim of some backstage hazing, led to a face-off between him and JBL, and he ended up asking to leave. So not much of a run for Palmer. Of course, he was the foe for Teddy Long as part of the network representation over on SmackDown. So there you go. TV by the numbers, Raw 674 episodes, Heat 406 on 4-4. And Steven has been kind enough now to start adding in some notes from the dirt sheets as well in here, so we can talk about those. So WWE announced on their mobile service on April 4th that Randy Orton was suspended for unprofessional conduct. 8 days later, it was confirmed that Randy's suspension would be an indefinite one, but they were planning to keep him on a contract. On 4/11, it was announced that Taboo Tuesday would be no more, be replaced by Cyber Sunday, and there'd be 15 pay-per-views the following year in 2007, which is crazy. Yeah. On April 13th, it was speculated that John Cena hasn't been affected by poor crowd reactions. The management is planning to turn him heel in the future. And some actually surprised it didn't happen at WrestleMania. So, Scott, there you go. That's the genesis. 10 years. 10 years to the day, almost.
of that.
Still having the same discussion.
This was the second straight year because the Raw, the night after WrestleMania 21, was at the Staples Center.
Okay, there you go.
So, obviously... 23
was as well, Detroit?
I'm going to check 23 right now. But I know that, obviously, 2004, they didn't have back-to-back shows at the Garden. Okay. I don't know. Where were they? They were in Tacoma the night after 19 when Goldberg debuted?
Yeah, I don't count that. It's got to be the same city.
No, I know. I'm just saying. I don't think it went further back than that. So, go ahead. Keep doing your notes. I'll check 2007.
Okay. On 4/24, it was speculated that DX would be on the verge of reuniting. It's part of Triple H's face turn, but it's unsure if Shawn Michaels will be part of the reunion due to his religious beliefs. Sean Waltman would strongly resign with the company and join Triple H in the faction.
Why the hell would bother then?
On 4/27, speculation has risen that Rob Van Dam would be cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase on the SmackDown champion. However, this would mean a jump from Raw to SmackDown, so we'll talk about that. Triple H is on the verge of becoming a face. John Cena doesn't require negativity when he's wrestling each week for the fans' approval. And, yeah, I'd say that's about it there. ROH celebrated 100 shows on April 22nd. And on a bad note, when Team CZW defeated Team ROH, many still bitch about this today with New Japan replacing CZW as far as ROH jobbing all the time. On Heat, we had Goldust defeating Rob Conway. And there was also a complaint after the show, Scott, due to the blood shed by Shawn Michaels and Triple H. The State Athletic Commission bitched about it. Any performer who accidentally bleeds during a match must immediately be stopped until they receive medical attention and stop bleeding. So I can't believe that's actually still a thing here in 2006, but it is.
Athletic commissions? I thought they all went extinct. I mean, that's bizarre. 2007, not even close. WrestleMania 23 at Ford Field. The Raw the night after was at the Mail House.
23, you mean?
What's that?
You said 27. You mean 23?
I mean WrestleMania 23 was at Ford Field. The next night at the Mail House. Wesley Mail, otherwise known as the Nutter Center in Dayton. So they weren't even close in 2007. I'll take a quick check just to confirm 2008, but I'm pretty sure 2008 was at the Amway Center. Because that was Flair's big thing and all that. Let me check 2009, though. Go ahead, finish your notes. I'll check 2009 because I just want to see.
That's it. Finished.
Oh, you're finished? Damn it. All right. Quick check of 2009. 2008 was definitely at the Amway Center because that was the Flair retirement. Let me just check and see if 2009 was.
All right. Well, I'm going to do your job then. Actually, what do we do next? This is the first match that we talked about. Up first, we have a big match here. Is former tag team partners collide when a Carlito faces off with Chris Masters. Of course, they had been teaming for many months here and had, you know, we talked about it last week, the kind of the pinky and the brain thing. They've had some issues that have cropped up week over week. Of course, it started at New Year's Revolution and the Rumble where they kind of cost each other matches and then at WrestleMania again. So on 4-3, when Chris Masters quickly defeated a jobber after the match, Carlito hit the ring, pretended to celebrate with Masters and then dropped him with a backcracker, stomped him and spit apple in his face. Officially ending the partnership. The next week, Carlito agreed to take the Master Lock Challenge, but after sitting down, Carlito tossed an apple in the air, and when Masters went to catch it, Carlito jumped up, grabbed the chair, and knocked Masters over the head with it. On 4/17, Masters got some revenge when he jumped Carlito and was able to get him in the Master Lock. And so friends finally split here, Scott, after constant issues. What do you think about the roles here for these two guys? Because when you look at it in the flesh, to me, Carlito becomes the face. And maybe because he's kind of doing the smart alecky, douchey kind of guy that, you know, in the Attitude Era would been a face. But here, Masters kind of feels like he's better suited, almost like in a gentle giant role. He's been the guy that keeps getting taken advantage of by Carlito. He's the guy that Carlito keeps screwing over. Carlito's the dick who spits apples in people's faces. And to me, Masters almost has a better offensive moveset for that gentle giant role where he could sell a bunch and make the big powerful comebacks. And Carlito kind of has that slimy little heel streak in him that we've seen over the last couple of years. So, and Carlito keeps acting like a dick too. Like he's an asshole to Masters and he comes off as like a jerk. So to me, I thought looking at it and how we've watched the team and feud eventually unfold, it really felt to me like they would have been better suited to have Masters take over the face role after Carlito, you know, kind of dumped him and was a dick to him and have Carlito just be the arrogant heel still.
I agree 100%. That's going to be one of my points when I do my comments. It just makes no sense. It's when it comes to, you know, smart little guy, big dumb guy combo, heel combos, the big dumb guy always ends up being the baby face because it's just common sense that the, you know, the smarter guy is taking advantage of the dumb guy and being used as his weapon. And so, I'm going to get more into my comments about breaking them up in the first place. But to confirm, the night after WrestleMania 25 was indeed at the Toyota Center in Houston. So pretty much starting with WrestleMania 21, they pretty much, with the exception of WrestleMania 23, they pretty much did stay in the same city.
Can't blame them for getting out of Detroit as fast as they could.
Exactly. Stupid Duncans. So, yeah, I'll get more into my when I get to my comments more about that. But, yeah, it's just, it was utterly stupid. I mean, you know, he's not smart enough, apparently, to do a heel turn. So why make him?
Right.
It makes no sense. I agree with you. Makes no sense.
I agree 100%. So, and Masters has been really good in this run. I think some of the just seems to get it, like way more than I ever thought rewatching it. I've really enjoyed him. So he controls the power early. Carlito starts to stick and move and takes it to his old buddy. Carlito hooks a master lock to a big pop, but Masters easily busts out of it. And the story of the match here is really Carlito outsmarting Masters. He ducks a charge and Masters tumbles to the floor. Carlito meets him with a plancha. Masters comes back with a nice buckle powerbomb and then goes to work on the neck and upper back with a focused attack. Carlito comeback is cut off and Masters has a good reverse neck breaker. Carlito hits a springboard back elbow and picks up the pace as he starts to fight back. He grabs an apple, throws it in the air, and then drop kicks Masters. I thought that was pretty funny. Carlito comes back and forth with a top rope moonsault that grazes Masters. Carlito slips out of the master lock by running Masters into the turnbuckle and hitting a backstabber. He puts his feet on the ropes and gets the win. You know, I thought it was a spirited opener. I thought both guys worked hard. Masters keeps impressing. Carlito gets the win to get his face turned up and running. Not the best opener, but I thought it was a fine, you know, decent enough payoff to what they had building. And again, just more disappointed with the direction they took both guys. I just thought, when you've watched everything unfold, having Carlito go face, it reeked of, you know, Attitude Era kind of stuff, like Val Venus, the porn star, and any other, you know, that bangs people's wives would have been a heel in any other era than those, like, 3 years in the Attitude Era. And it's kind of the same here for a guy like Carlito. He's just a real douche, smarmy asshole. Maybe in 1999 he's a face. Here he's screamed heel still.
Yeah. All right, point number one. Again, why break these guys up in the first place?
Yeah.
You need tag teams. They were a good tag team. Did you really need to break them up simply to
add
a match
need
to
a what grinds my gears thing from like Family Guy before you get you go to your points.
You know,
point one. What's the deal with this guy?
What's the deal with this guy? Like, why let it go a little longer? Did you break them up simply just to add a match to the show? That's dumb. It's a stupid reason to do it. They were a good team. You know, they put on a good match at Mania. I mean, as best they could with Kane and Big Show. Neither of them were doing anything at the time. You know, Masters, you're not quite sure what you're going to do with him over the long haul. And Carlito, he's already won both secondary singles belts. He's already won the U.S. title. He's already won the Intercontinental title. So really nothing left for him to do at the moment. Just keep him together. You know, and I don't want anybody saying, oh, the Spirit Squad group kind of usurped them. No, they didn't. We'll talk about the Spirit Squad later. But one has nothing to do with the other. So that was dumb. Never should have broken him up in the first place. Number two, at a point we talked about before, why is Carlito the babyface? Makes zero sense whatsoever. He's the douchey little prick who spits apple in your face. And, you know, Masters is the big dumb oaf who's got the good look and little pea brain. And it made no sense. He should have been the babyface. I don't know how – the only thing I will say, though, is I don't know how you would tweak his character to make him less dopey with the – you know, with the the cape and the entrance and everything. I don't know how you could baby face it up.
Why not? I like just do what he's doing. No, I would just, I'd keep it and just have him clap hands on the way down. I think it works. I mean, and if you sell it as like he was manipulated by Carlito this whole time, you know what I mean? And he's just like this nice guy that does good things, and Carlito was making him, you know, be a jerk and do, you know, be an asshole because he was using him for, you know, I think it's an easy story to tell.
Mm, okay. I mean, it has nothing to do with his character. He still should have been a babyface. I was just thinking about how they could babyface up the entrance. But I guess, yeah, I could just. High-fiving fans just easily changes you, so I guess it's a small tweak to do. So, and number three,
not be an asshole. That's the easiest switch.
Yeah, and number three, Masters I think needed to win, even babyface or heel. I think he needed to win more.
Yeah,
than Carlito. So I would have had Masters win anyway.
Well, let me. I think we're gonna qualify it this way. In a vacuum, Masters probably needed to win more. Mm-hmm. Looking at what they're looking at, I don't think they expected much from. I don't think they were planning much for Masters. I think Carlito was in their plans as like a upper mid card face.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in their minds, I can see why they went with Carlito, if that makes sense. I think in a pure vacuum, if you look at the history of where they've been, yes, mm-hmm. Masters probably needed to win more. But I think when you really look at, okay, they obviously want to use Carlito in a different role than Masters. So I think you have to give it to Carlito when you have the plans that they had.
Mm. I guess so. I just, you know, I don't know what you do with him now. I mean,
who?
Maybe he's a guy that Masters. I don't know if he's a guy now.
Well, there's a draft coming up, right? So maybe he's a guy that you would be decent on SmackDown.
SmackDown. Yeah, that's true, too. As for the match, it was good. Oh, I wouldn't. It was all right. I wouldn't go too bonkers with it, but it was a decent enough opener for what it was. But I highlight the fact that they never should have been broken up in the first place. And we'll get into that with another tag team later in the show for even stupider. More stupid reasons, but
yeah, I'm actually kind of okay with the breakup. I just think they did it wrong. I mean, they definitely need some. They need a little bit of talent in the singles ranks, but I mean, they weren't even really a full time team anyway. So I don't think it's right. A major blow to the tag division. But anyway,
all right. So there you go. So Carlito wins our opener. Match is a little under 10 minutes, 9:50. Actually, slightly under 10 minutes, 9:58. So I believe we go backstage. I believe Maria is backstage.
Too bad.
Gaz. I think it was Lita anyway.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it. I only write it down if it's important. I don't have it written down, so there you go.
Yes. All right, so here we go. I got a lot to say about this match. I want to get to my bullet points because this, but not in a good way, not in a good way at all. But we have a big debut here, JR. Not a debut of the guy, but of the character this guy is playing. Who is it?
Well, I know Flair was like a younger brother to you, so for him to get treated like this. Eddie Fatu is last seen playing the role of Jamal from 3 Minute Warning, portrays Umaga.
Umaga.
After being released in June of 2003, Fatu headed to Japan where he competed until late 2005. In December, he re-signed with WWE, and many just assumed he'd be reunited with Rosie. They began working dark matches together, but however, before they reunited on TV, Rosie was released. On April 3rd, Fatu debuted as Umaga, a native Samoan warrior, led to the ring by eclectic Armando Alejandro Estrada. There were rumors out there at the time, and that's still being discussed today when you consider his run now, that internet independent darling Samoa Joe was being wooed to portray the controversial gimmick, but he was afraid of being typecast in the role and stuck with TNA, which on the surface seems stupid. At the time, it wasn't the wrong decision, per se, because guys like him weren't being treated too well in WWE. It was starting to change a little bit, and TNA was actually in a decent place in 05 and 06. Like, they were well-regarded. They were having good shows. They had a great roster. My issue with Joe is he should have jumped, like, 3 or 4 years later. Like, I think he waited too long. But it's delicate because WWE really didn't mentally get into the place to properly utilize guys like him until, like, maybe 2011, 12, maybe, you know? I know Punk and Brian were around before then, but when you think of when these guys really started to break through and get utilized the proper way, I think it was more like around 2012-ish. So it's kind of a dead-end period for Joe. Anyway.
Right.
Just thought there. Right. Hazem Ali began his WWE career in 2005 in OVW, portraying an Arabic bodyguard for Muhammad Hassan. After Hassan ascended to the main roster, Ali was rechristened Osama Rodriguez Alejandro and would wrestle as well as handle backstage interview duties. He would remain in the roles until being brought up to the main roster in April as Armando Alejandro Estrada, manager for Umaga.
The Samoan Bulldozer.
I loved Alejandro Estrada Armando.
Me too. Me too.
Out of the gate. Like, it was such a throwback. Here's this big, colorful, bright manager, full-on mouthpiece, a gimmick that captures the imagination. He's a great talker, a good look. Like, I thought he was like, it was such a breath of fresh air to suddenly have this guy in the ranks on the main show. On 4-3, Ric Flair was cutting a promo in the ring when the debuting Estrada interrupted him. Armando talked about watching Flair on TV when he was a young boy in Cuba, but that Flair's time was over. He brought out Umaga, who destroyed Flair in the ring. The next week, Umaga made his official in-ring debut, quickly squashing a jobber. 2 weeks later, Umaga squashed another jobber, but after the match, Flair made his return, knocked Umaga to the floor, and was announced that these two would battle on the pay-per-view. So here we go. I thought the whole act, again, clicked really quickly, thanks to the hard work. This is a big chance for him to make a strong statement out of the gate against Flair. Umaga attacks Flair on the floor, but starts, but Flair gets dirty, goes to the eyes in a low blow. Flair dodges a running splash in the corner, and the match goes to the floor, where Flair chops away and dodges Umaga, who runs into the post. Flair's wrestling pretty smart and wily so far, but Umaga kicks out of a figure four. Umaga hangs Ric Flair in a tree of woe and smashes him with a running headbutt. Umaga has the second rope headbutt and hits the Samoan spike for the clean win. Pretty much just a squash, and it was huge for Umaga because it puts him over really strong. Dismantles Flair. I thought it was a great start to Umaga's pay-per-view career. His offense and his presence is great, and I think it just needs time to get the gimmick over, because the fear originally is that this guy was just going to be a cartoony 80s, 70s style jobber. I mean, not jobber, a monster. And you have him out here, and the look and the gimmick feels very dated, something that shouldn't fit in the 2000s. So it's all about the way they present and utilize him. And as we'll see, I think they do it right for once. And credit to him for busting his ass to get it over. You know, he doesn't rest on the fact that he's a big monster. He breaks out like a really pretty good, versatile offense. I'm sure you're going to be against what I'm saying here, but I have no problem sacrificing Flair like this. If there's ever a time to do it, it's here. To a guy like Umaga that you want to be a main eventer, that you want to make a statement. This is a far cry from when, like, Rico pinned Flair on Raw. You know, like, this is a pay-per-view match. You're putting over a big monster, and he destroys an old man. Like, to me, it made perfect sense. So I'm curious to see how your take is.
I'll talk about the match first in terms of Umaga, and then I'll get into my 3 points. I like the Umaga character, and I agree with everything that happened in this situation and with this match and what Umaga was needed to do. But having Ric Flair is a fucking joke. Point one, it's Ric Flair. I don't give a damn how old he is. I don't care how not over he is, how past his prime he is. You don't take one of the greatest wrestlers in the history of this business and treat him like Iron Mike fucking Sharp.
Oh, come on.
No
it's
way.
Not like he didn't go like a half hour with some scrub. I mean, this is a main event guy they're putting over.
No.
Flair's old.
Sorry. No.
He's old. He's not old. He should be treated like
work.
He's old.
Svengali your fucking self all you want. You're wrong.
I'm not Svengali. I'm just telling you what I think and that it's the truth. I just think
it's not the truth.
Guy like Flair. No. Listen, if you're Ric Flair and you want to hang on and still be active full time in 2006, at the age of how old?
I don't know what he was in 2006. Probably right. Early 50s, I guess. 52, 53.
Okay, so you want to hang around that long on TV. Let's see. He was born in... He's 67 now. So that was... Yeah, so 57. So he's 57 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You want to keep him on TV. He wants to keep wrestling and be active. This is what you do with guys that are that age in that position. I don't care how the reverence, who they are. You don't last that long and not be put in a position to put guys over. I don't know if he should job every week. I'm fine, though, using him for stuff like this. To me, he didn't look bad. Umaga is presented as a monster. He should kill Flair, and he just hurt him 2 weeks ago. What did you want, Flair to beat him or just not be in the match? Is that what you're saying?
No, he shouldn't have been in this spot at all.
But you want to put Umaga
over? No, I'm not saying Flair should have beat him. No, Flair shouldn't have been
but
the
guy. But it was built up, too. Like, they built it well. It wasn't like he just – I'd agree with you if it was just like – last minute, they threw it on the card and he squashed them. I mean, it had a good story behind it. Flair, you know, Flair shouldn't even. I don't know. I don't. What, if you're not going to use Flair for this, what are you using him for? Not
well. You still
use him
to put guys over,
huh?
You still using him to put guys over, but not 3.5 minutes and he gets no offense. I don't care how big Umaga is. No, there's other guys on this roster. You could have got Regal, or you could have got anybody else who's doesn't have that reverence. Yeah, the reverence is a big deal. You may not think so. I do.
Then he shouldn't be wrestling.
Well, maybe he shouldn't have.
But he is. So this is how they should use him.
No. Not putting guys over is one thing. Laying down for a gimmick you don't know whether it's going to work or not.
Yeah, but how do you know? You got to make it work by doing stuff like this. If he comes out and squashes some bum, then you're just being like anyone else.
He came out and destroyed
Ric Flair. That's a big stamp to move him forward.
It is a big stamp if you have him face do like you do for a guy later on in the year, another guy that's going to debut on the other roster in like October, and actually have him beat up a couple jobbers.
Yeah, but we saw that already. Months. We just watched it with Mordecai and Kenzo Suzuki and all these other guys did the same thing you're saying. And what happened? They farted out. I'm sorry, you can't. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not saying this in the most derogatory way possible. It's going to sound like it. You're just being a real big Ric Flair mark at the worst possible time. Because it's fine. He can be reverent, and you can talk about his legend and how great he is. And yes, you can argue that many did. We just 17,000 hours of podcast and 15,000 posts of PWO prove that Ric Flair is the greatest of all time. But he, that doesn't mean that at the end of your career, you shouldn't be used in situations like this. Everyone's
I have no problem putting guys over. And he's done that. He's put over Orton. He's put over a lot of guys.
Right. And he knew it. But, that's why he's hanging around. You're going to be used that
like,
way.
But to be treated, I mean, this is Barry O level
what
laying down
done
for
on the show then.
Hmm?
What should he have done in the show? Because in your world, you have him defending Money in the Bank briefcase, which is ridiculous. But go ahead.
No, that was only if there was no RVD. But yeah, he should have done that too. But because that stuff gets viewers. People
gets
still
viewers?
Like that aspect. It's an interesting, unique nostalgia thing.
Not really. But at this point, everyone's bitching about the old guys still hanging on and the young guys can't break through. And you want Ric Flair to be back on top as champion?
Everyone's going to piss and moan that Umaga didn't get a break. I'm not saying that. Just Ric Flair doesn't belong in this spot. And if I'm Marky, fuck it, I'm Marky. Deal with it.
You're leading the funky bunch. That's how Marky you are.
Yeah, I am. Umaga should not, and I don't want to see Umaga and Tidy Whiteys. But anyway, you're going to disagree, and that's it. We got more points to discuss. Number two, let's talk about one thing we do agree on. Hot Estrada takes. Is fantastic.
Yes, he is.
Great local manager. Love it. Love it. Because he understood it. Now, he's probably a student of that. And, you know, being an OVW, I'm sure Heyman, who was down there, probably kind of helped him out. And Cornette. Was Cornette there in 05, or was he in TNA by then? Cornette was gone, right?
No, I don't think so. I think he was still in OVW, wasn't he?
Okay. Well, then even better.
Yeah.
Then he helped Estrada kind of understand the Grand Wizard, Freddie Blassie-ish ways of doing things.
He left in May of 05. Yep, 2006 he joined. He was in TNA by at least Slammiversary in June, so.
Okay, but still, you have Heyman down there, and he obviously he's technically considered old school. Paul Lee was, a manager in 87, so maybe even slightly before that. So, great job of kind of grooming him in that old school manager-esque way of doing things. And he was perfect for Umaga,
If there's ever a guy that you want to put a mouthpiece on, this was a perfect
choice. Exactly. And I agree with that about Umaga. Point three, and this is interesting since you did mention Samoa Joe. I know this isn't going to happen, and this is more pseudo fantasy booking, and this is more unrealistic than what I was saying earlier with Flair in point one. I think somebody should have gotten in Vince's ear and said, listen, if you want a real good wrestler, I think you should bring in Samoa Joe. Still have him be Estrada's guy, but ditch the face paint and the dopey music and just let him be Samoa Joe.
Yeah, I think that was one school of argument at the time.
I'm sure somebody had to have said that. But Vince, as we will talk about later, had his head clearly up his ass.
I don't mind the character, though. Like, I don't know. Like, it
stood
out.
No, I don't mind the character either. No, I agree with you. I don't mind the character for Eddie Fatu.
Right. But I just would have brought Samoa Joe in separately and not had him be Estrada's guy.
Sure. You could have done that, too. I agree.
But I don't blame Joe for not jumping at this point. I don't blame him at all. Because when you look at the landscape of what WWE was in 06 versus what TNA was, he was way more suited for TNA or like a Ring of Honor at that time. I mean, and that the line of thought wasn't at that point, like, go to the big time. Like, TNA was looked at as on the rise, like possible contender at this point in 06.
So. 2006 was probably, you could look back. And when we would try to do the LOL TNA jokes on Main Event, 2002 to 2005 had a lot of crap in it. But when I was trying to sift through the 2006, I'm like, really, there wasn't anything much to make fun of.
Yeah, 05,
they actually have a bad year.
05, 06, I think even to 07 was pretty solid. They So I don't blame Joe for not going.
No.
But no. I like the throwback. They needed guys that stood out, and Umaga stood out, and he had the mouthpiece. And yeah, sure, it's a little dated, the idea of it. But you know what? They do it in a pretty good way. They don't do it in a too much of a ham-fisted way. Initially, it made it seem that way, but they make it work. And like I said, a lot of credit to Estrada and Umaga for buying in and doing what they had to do to get the gimmick over.
Right. Yeah, I like the gimmick too. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if they did want Joe, yeah, Joe should have. If you're just going to get Joe and, just make him Samoa Joe. But, of course, Vince was probably still in his – the way he's acting now, having a good wrestler who happens to have a gut, not in his frame of mind.
Jobbing out 57-year-old guys.
Yeah. Well, that's different.
Yeah.
Because Samoa Joe would have told
Flair. Cena clean in the ring. That's it.
Well, Cena at this point. Fans would actually like that, though, JR, so that's not even a good example.
No. Isn't that what everyone bitched about WCW doing? Like, this was they should have been doing with these guys in the late 90s, and here we are. I don't know. I just think this one's fine. To me, this is way different than the shit they pulled with Flair, earlier or whatever. Like I said, the Rico thing and everything else. To me, this was...
No, that shouldn't have been done either, but you're right.
Right, that was stupid. And Flair still had some juice in 02. By this point, it's like you kind of exhausted, using him and, he's Triple H's bodyguard. You did the tag thing with bodyguard manager. You did the tag thing with Batista. Right. I mean, to me, you did all that stuff. And now, he's on the back nine. He's past the back nine. He's on the, the beyond the back nine. So to me, he's at the restaurant after the 18th hole. So to me, him... I'd leave him there drinking at the bar.
I'll say this. I still disagree with it, but I'll say this. If Flair agreed to it, if he thinks this was a good thing to do, then who might argue? I just thought he was the wrong guy to just get his ass kicked in 3.5 minutes. Just my issue. But otherwise, Umaga's a great character, and I'm going to enjoy his evolution as we go through 06 and particularly 07. Yes. But,
I might have to just play the Triple H montage for Flair as well for you in this one. Jesus.
But anyway, Umaga wins. I'm pissed off at who he had to beat, but he's still a great character, and we're looking forward to seeing him go down through 06.
You're right to Hard-On City.
All right, next. Dispute it all you want. Next, our first title match of the evening, the Women's Championship.
Actually, we do go backstage now.
Oh, no, we do go backstage. Okay.
We go backstage where the boys you mentioned earlier, Vince and Shane, were prepping.
Oh, God.
Vince continues his over-the-top challenging of God, says God can't do anything, he can't do either. Vince walks on water and then multiplies fish and bread. And we'll talk about it, but I thought this was so over-the-top with Vince's commitment that I thought it was funny. And I liked Shane's no-selling of the whole thing. Like, I thought that capped it. But we'll I'm sure we're going to talk in-depth about that later on.
All right. Back to the ring. Again, as I mentioned, our first title match of the evening, JR. Our women's championship on the line. Your champion, the Hachimachi Mickey James. Mm-hmm. Of course, won the title finger-licking good at WrestleMania. I was curious to where they would go from here after that. How do they go from there to here?
Well, on 4-3, Mickey James teamed with Candice Michelle to defeat Trish Stratus and Tori Wilson. The mind games continued, however, as Mickey came out dressed just like Trish, having dyed her hair blonde. The next week, Mickey defeated Maria, but after the bout, Trish turned the tables and came out dressed and acting like Mickey. She proceeded to kiss Mickey on the lips, and Mickey freaked out and sent scurrying to the back. On 4-17, things go weirder as Trish, dressed like Mickey, was in the ring with a giant box. Mickey came out, and Trish opened the box to reveal her ex-boyfriend, Jack, tied up to the chair. Trish baited Mickey, saying that if she were really Trish, then she would care what happened to her boyfriend. Mickey took the bait and charged the ring, but Trish met her with a spinebuster and then took off. Mickey recovered and kicked Jack in the head for cheating on her. It was then announced that the two ladies would tussle a backlash, and on 4-24, Mickey gave up the charade, but Trish kept it going. And when she came out, she just kept finishing Mickey's sentences with things boiling over, and the two brawled to put the finishing touches on the build. Both ladies were, of course, back to the normal looks of the match here. And this always reminds me of the Kelly Taylor storyline from 90210 when she had the stalker. Remember that wanted to be like her and tried to kill her with the carbon monoxide in the car?
Who played her? Who was the stalker? Was it somebody popular?
Name. Do you remember her name?
Somebody famous? I gotta look.
I don't think so. Who the hell was it?
Not the. Remember what season? What season was that?
They're
like
in the
season
beach
five?
House. Let's see. Let's see if I can find it here. Yeah, they were definitely the beach house. This one, Tara was her name.
Okay. Let me see.
Season 7,
I remember that.
Maybe?
It was like season... Yeah, it was like seven or eight.
I think seven, because Kelly has a short hair, too.
Okay.
Because Brenda was there for 5 years, and Kelly and Brandon get together the next year. She has, like, the half short, and then she goes full short the next one. So it was, I think it's season 7.
Season 7? Okay, I'll look it up. Go ahead.
Okay. Interesting twist on the feud. Great angle continuing as they cosplay with each other and get to this interesting twist. Both, of course, quite hot, as we mentioned many times. Trish outworks Mickey early on, playing some mind games as well. Trish jumps Mickey to the floor with a stiff kick to the face and then hits a Thez press off the apron. Back inside, things turn around as Mickey shoves Trish off the floor, off the top to the floor, and this is where things go bad, Scott. Trish's arm bends in a nasty, gross way as she tried to break her fall on the apron on the way down. Trish slides back in. You could tell she's fucked because she's really favoring her arm. Mickey tries her, you know, her best to hold things together to keep things going, and eventually they realize that they need to end it. So Mickey keeps choking, and the referee finally calls for the DQ to stop the match. JR tries to cover them. Mickey got DQ'd on purpose to save her title, but it was obvious what happened. I thought it's a tough finish to a heated feud. It reminded me a lot of Lita Trish at New Year's Revolution 05, a great feud that got cut short in its blow off. It's good while it's lasted, a tough break with a nasty injury, and it sends Trish to the sidelines here. So did you find out any info, and then give me your take?
I'm looking at her character. I didn't see anything in the season 7 episodes about her.
Give me your points.
Okay. Point one, I'm curious to think as I'm watching it. I wonder if the sizzle.
Paige Moss was the actress.
No idea who that is. So you're right.
Tara Marx. She appeared in season 6, actually.
Season 6, okay.
Well, that's where she was in the thing with Kelly during in rehab.
Oh, okay. That's right.
That's right, because it was after the fire.
Oh, right, the fire. They got to get this show on full-blown streaming. Like 85% of it's on Hulu, but there's like holes everywhere in terms of missing episodes. It sucks.
She was known for Can't Hardly Wait in 1998, Killer Instinct in 01. And Augie Rose in 2000, married to Rick Cameron.
Hmm, okay. Is that like Kirk? Is that his brother?
She was in an episode of Hercules, Buffy, ER. So it was another character actor, a lot of TV appearances.
Right. All right. Point one. I kind of feel that the feud lost a little sizzle after Mania. Like, it was so hot and sexy because Mickey was the one getting in Trish's head. I wasn't crazy about it in reverse. I liked when Mickey was the crazier one.
Well, you gotta give Trish some level of control or comeuppance. So, I mean, I thought it worked because Mickey's really tormented her since like December, and Trish finally figures out a way to get back at her. So, I mean, I know what you're saying, but you gotta give Trish some rub. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta let her.
Oh, no, of course.
She basically, you know, Mickey hounded her, played mind games, and then beat her clean at Mania. So, you had to do something to let Trish get back on top a bit.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm just saying it needed to be done. I just felt like it lost a little sizzle because of it. But it needed to be done. Point two, you could definitely tell Trish's shoulder was fucked up because, I mean, she sits up and there's like, you know, bones, you know, bumps popping out of her shoulder and weird spots. And it didn't look good. You could definitely tell she did something wrong.
Yeah, you could tell right away. And the way she comes back in is just holding her arm, and it looked way more than selling. And Mickey's trying to do her best, and then they had it.
Yeah, they just make up an excuse to call for the DQ, yeah. Something weird happened.
They
you could see,
stop
like,
the match, though. Like, I feel like they weren't as good at on the fly like they kind of are now, because I want to say from like a presentation standpoint, they don't mind the realism more now with that kind of stuff because they try and present it somewhat more of like a sport these days than they did then.
Right.
So like, I think these days they just would have called the match off, and they did that recently, right? Who the hell just got injured? Oh, Enzo. Or I mean, it would be something like that where they just kind of end the match. I feel like back then they still felt like they had a cover for things from a kayfabe perspective. And it comes off looking kind of weak. You know, JR, oh yeah, she's trying to save the belt. Yeah, she was just dominating the match, and Trish looked like a complete gimp with her arm hanging.
You could see like the end of her collarbone was like pointing in a weird direction. It was gross. Number three. I think a blessing in disguise for Mickey. Now, no one wants anybody to get hurt. Not at all. But, and obviously, Trish's injury is not serious. I mean, she dislocated her shoulder. You pop it back in, you have a convalescent, you come back. It's not that bad. This might be a blessing for Mickey. Because now it's a chance for her to kind of show some stuff as a heel against some of the other baby faces on the roster.
Let me ask you this. Do you think she was going to keep the title?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you would have done a one-month-off thing and then have Trish win it back. I think Mickey was going to win it anyway.
So you think she was going to win? Or I'm wondering if JR wasn't completely off, if they were going to do something where Mickey gets DQ'd on purpose to keep the title, and maybe he just used that to cover. Because it seems weird. I can't see her pinning Trish again. And I'm with you. I don't see Mickey's reign ending already. So I feel
You asked if she was going to keep the title.
Yeah. No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying
okay.
I'm saying that I think they would have done something screwy though. I don't think she would have gotten pinned by Trish, and I don't think she would have pinned Trish again. So I think I think when JR says, when he uses the cover of when he says that Mickey got DQ'd on purpose, I'm wondering if that was the finish. He just rushed, you know, he used the explanation still is what I'm saying. So that type of finish would have made sense to me to do here is what I'm saying.
Right. No, you're exactly right. But I think with Trish out, I think this is a good opportunity for Mickey, whether they decide to find some – because at the time, what other babyface women do you have? It's really not many. Tori? I mean, who's left at the moment? They really, really focused on Trish as like the face of that division.
Well, I guess Victoria's a heel, right? You've got –
Yeah, Victoria's a heel. I mean, technically Tori's a face because she faced Candace. Oh, God. I mean, Candace was the heel. I don't know. So maybe it's not great. Because the company focused so much on Trish as the baby face, I guess, of the division, you're kind of left in a bit of a pickle now.
Well, fortunately, there's a debut or two coming. So. Yeah.
What's that?
There's a debut or two coming as well.
Yeah, well, actually, there was a debut. Wasn't there one at this point, or was it after this?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I thought it was during this point. Maybe not. So we'll see. I'm optimistic. I was optimistic at the time because it would be nice to see Mickey face other people. But the way they were kind of booking the division at the time, Trish was the face of it, and there really wasn't any other baby faces around that could really look good. So I'm curious to see. In any event, Mickey James retains the women's championship by a DQ, but a big X from the referee. Trish Stratus separates her shoulder.
What day was this show? It was right after. It was the week after this.
Okay. April 30th was the show. But Trish is out. We don't know how long. Dislocated shoulders. Depends. I mean, if they popped it back quick right that night, 6 weeks maybe, 2 months tops. Depends on how much ligament or cartilage damage, but it may not have been that long. It's not like a football injury, like Tony Romo snapping his collarbone 50,000 times. So there we go. Mickey James retains the women's championship. All right. Next up, we have our second title match of the evening, but quite a bit on the line here.
Yeah. A lot on the line. A
lot on the line here, JR. Give us the backs of the info.
Hold
the skinny.
The line. On 4/10, Shelton Benjamin challenged Rob Van Dam for his Money in the Bank briefcase. He said Ric Flair should have been holding that, not you. RVD exactly. Denied the offer, but instead challenged Shelton for the IC title. On 4/17, Charlie Haas made a surprise return, defeated his former partner. Due to a pre-match stipulation, Shelton's IC belt would indeed now be on the line at Backlash with RVD. Later the night, Shelton begged Vince to fix things, and Vince agreed after Shelton claimed to be a Vince disciple. Vince would have RVD face a Spirit Squad in a handicap match, and if RVD lost, the briefcase would be on the line as well. RVD was, of course, unable to overcome the odds and succumbed to the cheerleaders. Therefore, everything is now on the line. The next week, RVD pinned Sheldon in a six-man tag, as Rotella would say.
Mm-hmm.
So good match on paper, Scott, but I think it's a very weird spot for them to put both of these things on the line. I think it's a very big no-win situation because you're not giving the briefcase to Shelton. So in one way, it telegraphs the ending. And like, if RVD is going to be going for a world title, why does he need to be IC champ? Shelton's got a good thing going on with the IC belt. So I didn't care for this, and it almost screams, well, you're going to do a shit DQ. It reminded me a lot of that Brock-RVD match from... was it Vengeance 02? Remember they were kind of booked in the corner because they didn't want RVD to lose the IC belt? And they wanted Brock to keep the
Vengeance?
Title shot or not lose. Yeah,
it wasn't Vengeance, right? Because he fought, didn't he fight the Hardys? No, that was a King of the Ring.
No, it was Vengeance 02. No, because Brock won King of the Ring.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah, it was Vengeance.
And then he fought RVD again in Vengeance. But remember they had like a shit finish. It was like a DQ finish or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Two reasons. Number one, because Brock had won King of the Ring, and he was already announced as having the title shot.
Right, that's what I mean. So you weren't going to have him win the IC belt, and you weren't going to have him lose to RVD. So it just reminded me a lot of this. Not as big stakes, but... So RVD's still settling back in, clearly being elevated a bit. Shelton works the arm as a crowd chants for RVD. RVD reverses, and the match resets. They continue to trade some offense. Crowd is fully behind RVD at this point. He gets in a flurry. But Shelton rolls to the floor. RVD dives out with a crossbody. Shelton comes back with a stiff sunset flip powerbomb to the floor. Shelton goes to work in the lower back, picks up a near fall, and goes to the chin lock. Shelton just buries RVD with a knee to the face as he was draped across the middle rope and then goes back to a seated chin lock. RVD blocks a T-bone and shoves Shelton down, but Shelton counters a rolling thunder with a Samoan drop. I thought that was a nice sequence. Shelton tries for superplex, but RVD counters that and punches him off, and then Shelton leaps up and does the superplex for a two count. Shelton goes to a body scissors chin lock, but RVD powers out and then blocks a drop kick. RVD uses kicks to come back and then finally hits the rolling thunder for a near fall. RVD hits a split-legged moonsault, but then he comes up empty on a five-star frog splash. Shelton gets DDT and then dumps RVD to the floor. Shelton gets tripped up outside and grabs a briefcase to bait RVD and then kicks him in the face. RVD reverses the high cross body, counters a charge into a hurricanrana. Shelton grabs the case again and then tries to use it, but RVD ducks and uses it for a Vandaminator. RVD scoots up to the top, hits the five-star, and wins the match and the title. I thought it was a really fun match. I thought both guys looked great. I thought they both came off as strong. The crowd was super into RVD, his big push continuing. Shelton showed off all his athleticism. I thought the match was well executed. They gave them a lot of time to work. It went, 19 minutes almost. So everything checked out in a good way. I almost wish it was just non-title for the IC or something. I don't know. I just don't see the point in putting the IC belt on RVD, but this was a really good match.
I enjoyed this match a lot, actually. Worked well together. But yeah, the stipulations kind of hamstring you into predictability. Point one, I did not like, I understood the heel turn, like the full blown heel turn now after the whole mama thing for Shelton is right. But he comes out looking like a poor man's Rock, that stupid silk shirt and the dopey sunglasses. He looked like an idiot. Terrible turn in that aspect. I think he should have been more like when he was a heel with Kurt in 2003 and came out like with, like a athletic jacket kind of thing, kind of be like Kurt and be more of a maniacal, wrestling machine to a lesser extent. He just looked dopey with this. It looks like the same shirt Rock wore the night before WrestleMania 15, that weird tiger lion thing in the shades. Seemed like a poor man's Rock. I wasn't a fan of that part, but I think he should have been a little more athletic looking, almost like he was when he was with Kurt and Haas in 2003, almost like a technical killer kind of thing, to a lesser extent than Kurt. Point two, as great as the match was, a little slow in the middle, a lot of headlocks. I wasn't expecting that. I thought maybe they would work legs more, but it doesn't take away from the match. Last 5 minutes were really good, fast paced. So maybe they needed just kind of a different middle piece if the match is going to go almost 19, almost 20 minutes. So I was fine with that. It just surprised me a little bit. I wasn't expecting – it was a long time, obviously, since we watched the show. I don't remember it being that slow in the middle, but it's fine. The match still worked out great. Mm-hmm. And point three, RVD should have won anyway, but Shelton still looks fine. I still think he's a great heel. And this goes back to your point, JR. All these stips and all these things on the line just totally fucked the match up in that aspect. Ruined what would have been a great match if we didn't have all this predictability in terms of the stips. Shelton was not going to win the Money in the Bank briefcase. Why does RVD need another trinket? No need for that. And if Ric Flair was Money in the Bank, at least he wouldn't have got stopped in customs with Viagra and Scotch compared to whatever RVD leaves in the briefcase besides comic books. So there you go. But RVD wins, keeps his briefcase. He actually decorates it more than what Edge did last year. And not only is he still Money in the Bank, but he wins the Intercontinental Championship, first time he's had it since when he lost it to Eddie in 2002.
Whatever happened to predictability? RVD, the IC? No, he had it in 2003. Beat Christian, and they lost to Orton.
That's right. Armageddon. That's right. End of 2003. That's right. Incidentally, there was a season 1 episode the other night. It's amazing how some of those guys aged well and some of them didn't. Bob Saget aged not great.
Well, he's like a big drug user.
He might just be a pothead.
I don't know. Maybe not. But anyway.
I like his, you know, the way he was depicted on Entourage.
Yeah, I think that's pretty close to the reality.
A lot of hoolas in his house. But even Dave Coulier looks a lot better now than he did. And, you know, Stamos is Stamos. So RVD, once again, for the first time in 2.5 years, your Intercontinental Champion, and still has his Money in the Bank briefcase. But Shelton doesn't look bad here. Still looks good. It was a good match.
So we're going to keep a little tally here. I want you to put it in your notes. Kind of influenced by our buddy Duck at the Blog of Doom, who's around this time in his live watch, and he mentioned, he kind of keeps the top 10. And I want to, from here on out, I want to do what he, because I think from here on out, it's pretty glaring that Doty looks at this as the year from April to Mania. So I want to keep a list of, which we've never really done to this point on the show, stupidly enough, like our yearly top matches. So let's start it here, maybe.
Okay.
So do you think so far this is – I mean, I guess we got a few. We'll talk at the end of the night, but I want to keep this one in mind as maybe the best match so far. We'll see what comes up. So we're talking from Backlash to Mania 23, okay?
Okay.
We'll keep our top match list.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous that we've come through this many episodes of this show. We haven't done this yet.
Because we keep track of so many other lists and things.
No,
and
I know.
Definitely the best match. Well,
let's see. We'll talk at the end of the night. We'll talk at the end of the show.
Because there's one that's probably better than this, but that's okay. All right. Oh, Backlash 2. Okay, never mind. Okay, next up, our second of two matches involving... Yes, it does. Second of two matches involving a team that probably should have stayed together instead of breaking up.
Not involved!
But this one just has even more bizarre undertones. Go ahead.
On 4-3, Big Show and Kane saw their dominant tag title run come to an end at the hands of the Spirit Squad. It's a pretty big upset, but the squad used a 3-man advantage to steal the belts. The next week, things continued to fall apart for Kane, and he angrily stormed off an interview while a trailer for his new movie, See No Evil, aired. Later that night, he and Show were set for a rematch with the squad. Before the bout, Kane was shown backstage, struggling in agony as we heard voices proclaiming, "It's happening again, May 19th. You can't stop it." That racked his brain. Kane would snap during the match, throwing chairs in the ring and wiping everyone out, including the referee. After Show tried to calm down, Kane grabbed him by the throat and dropped him with a choke slam. On 4-17, Kane was taking on Rob Conway. After a quick win, he confronted Lillian Garcia and asked why she kept talking about May 19th, which is only true in his delusional mind. He shoved Lillian to the floor, which drew Show out for the save. Show hit Kane with a choke slam to stop the voices. On 4:24, the two giants got into a brawl backstage, with Kane trying to scratch out Big Show's eye from its socket, which, of course, was the whole crux of the See No Evil, was what his character did, was rip eyes out. So This reminded me a lot of the nonsense from Nitro with the Warrior, when Hogan was looking in the mirror and everyone could see it, but Bischoff couldn't.
Oh, God, yes.
Remember that? Like, that reminded me of this, where it's like, you know, no one, like Big Show, whatever, doesn't know what's going on, but everyone in the world can hear the May 19th that's supposedly in Kane's head.
Yes, I agree.
What did you think of this whole thing?
Stupid. I understand eventually, thank God they didn't do this as much, but, you know, WWE was still tipping their toe in the foray of these movies. And like they did for XFL, which they shouldn't have done, they're trying to use their product to promote the movie, and instead it looks really dopey. So this was idiotic to do this. But again, this is new to them, the whole movies thing, so they didn't really know, you know, let's cross promote. Well, at the sacrifice of having the product look stupid, no.
It's kind of like Old Bard.
Yeah, but Old Bard was better. That was different, though. You weren't using the movie. The movie had already come out, and that was done.
No.
They just took Zeus out of the movie and
made
him.
When did that movie come out? I thought Zeus was in. He wasn't on before the movie came out?
No, the movie was out already.
Huh.
Because, well, let's see. He came out on the 5. I almost have the date in my head. 5/27/89, Saren's main event. The movie was out already.
Look, you don't have an attitude about it. We're just trying to talk about it. And you're wrong, by the way. So you can take your smarminess and shove it up your ass. June 2nd, 89, the movie came out.
Oh, so I was off by 3 days.
Yeah, but he was on TV before the movie. That was the crux of the argument. Doesn't matter how many days it was by.
Terrible idea.
Poor Brel.
Because nobody knows. Well, then that's a stupid idea then. Then that was dumb too.
Now, if Ric Flair was in the movie, it would be a lot different.
Well, if Ric Flair was in the movie, it would have won an Oscar because he would have carried Hogan's sorry ass, but... And he would have won them. He would have won that cage match, not Boss Man. No.
He would have murdered Brel.
Yes. He would have come in the ring all drunk.
He would have gotten pissed on by Stan Hansen. So anyway.
Pissed on by Stan.
No, I mean, it is stupid. That part of it's stupid. That part of it's stupid. I liked the eye clawing. I thought that was good. It gave him a little bit of
eye clawing.
Yeah, it gave him a little of an edge, and I thought Show's like makeup and selling here of it was pretty cool, like all the scratches and bruising and blood around the eye. So like that part of it, I liked. I just didn't. The May 19th stuff was so hokey and over the top, especially when they're trying to sell like what's going on with Kane? Why is he being so weird? We can all hear it, dumbasses. We can hear the May 19th echoing in the fucking arena.
Something ridiculous.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Well, they were stupid.
Yep.
So anyway,
so
obviously no longer tag champs. Kane having his issues. Lots of fighting in the build-up, including the clawing at the eye. Show comes out firing with bombs, looking to end this quickly. Show looks bloated and awful once again. I feel like we're going to mention this a lot over the next few weeks, but really bad here. Kane makes a brief comeback with a boot, but Show keeps pouring it on. Kane jabs Show and then starts to choke away and lay in some clotheslines. Kane starts to target the shoulder. Pacing is deadly slow and monotonous here. Show catches Kane coming off the top and hits a fallaway slam. Kane comes back with an awkward DDT out of a choke slam, and the crowd is just completely dead. Show comes back with a big boot and leg drop, as JR says pretty much this match hasn't been pretty at all. Show gets a power slam for a near fall. Kane slugs Show to the floor, follows outside, but the lights go red, and we start to hear the May 19th voices. Kane flips out. He's writhing in pain. Show stops to check on him, and then with some concern, and then bashes him with a chair and makes the voices stop and knocks him out cold. And then Show goes into super overacting Big Show mode where he starts like crying and acting all conflicted about it. I thought the whole thing is a fucking shit show. I thought the match is terrible. The crowd completely dies off. Really bad across the board. Show's acting like really was the cherry on top of this dump of the sundae that we're eating here. This is an awful, like, withered face look that he had going on. Like, oh, my God. The only thing I didn't mind about this whole thing was that they're not really feuding because we don't need another Big Show Kane feud. At least they're doing it like it was like Show's kind of forced into it by Kane being crazy, you know? So, like, to me, that at least is something different. But the feud itself and the whole May 19th stuff is absurd. And just the match is dreadful. I mean, they've had bad matches before, but this is up there with them all.
Right. Wow, so this was even worse. I just wanted to back up that I was right at being wrong.
Yes.
If this makes any sense. But
yeah, because you're just wrong. You're not right.
Because wrestling's all about right and wrong. May 27th was the Saturday's main event, but it was taped on April 25th. So it was another like 7 weeks before the movie came out. And then they have Zeus standing there. Nobody knows who the hell he even is. I mean, unless they watch the trailer.
No,
but
I think they know. They showed the trailers all over Dirty FTV, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah, they knew.
They were still stupid. Fortunately, it worked out for them. We ended up getting a great main event at SummerSlam because Savage carried his ass. But all right.
You were able to be wrong about being wrong. Congratulations. You've entered the vortex.
You know. Whatever. Where's Bix when you need him? All right. Point one, another tag team that should have been broken up.
Bix would tell you that Ric Flair was jobbed correctly in April of 2006, I'll guarantee you that.
Bix would have told us, the station manager of the TV station, that he would have been told. By the way, we're promoting Between the Sheets, which is a fantastic podcast, by the way. Fantastic.
So we're going to approach the length of one if we don't get through this.
I know, really, right? Another team that should have been broken up. There was no need for this. No need for them to be broken up. They should have stayed together still. Not as bad as Carlito and Masters. They definitely should have stayed together. This isn't as big a deal, but there was still no need to break them up. They were kind of a cool team together. Point two, like I said, the clawing of the eye is awesome, and it looks painful. Like, if you feel like that skin at your eye separating, it hurts, but imagine, I mean, I know it was fake, but just imagine real life, it and the makeup and whatever looked good on Big Show with the
imagine
stitches.
Crazy murder ripping at your eye in real life.
Exactly.
And you can feel, you know, Big Show's pain. And why
I'm not chopping to Umaga, you son of a bitch. it was, it looked gross, and that's a good thing. So, and point three, my screen just went blank. Hold on. So yeah, the clawing of the eye looked pretty awesome. Point three, do we really have to go 9.5 minutes just for it to end in a no contest?
No, we didn't have to go 1 minute. I mean,
yeah, that was dumb. You could have gone like 3.5 minutes with this match and then have the no contest. But to go 9.5 minutes and then have a no contest? No need for that.
I mean, I'm with you. Them as a team was working. It gave them something to do, finally. They were having fun with it. They looked like they were having fun with it. I'm fine with sacrificing to the Spirit Squad, but yes, we didn't need it. We definitely did not need another match between these two guys. It's just not needed at all.
No, it's not. Absolutely not. So the match ends in a no contest. I don't know what the deal with Big Show is at this point then. I mean, I don't know if this is even a feud anymore, and Kane is...
He's crying bloody tears.
Yeah, it's to promote the movie, and it still makes no sense whatsoever. All right.
It would have been like if they had Christopher Lloyd on Superstars before Suburban Commando came out, and everyone would have been super confused about why he was there.
Exactly. And then he goes, I was frozen today, and no one would have known what frozen he was talking about.
Why was he frozen? Let it go.
Why was he frozen? Exactly.
Let it go.
Eventually, you'll understand I'm making sense. Why don't we take a break? This show sucks so far. It really is. It's not. I mean, the RVD Shelton match has been great, but an Imaga squash, it is what it is. But the rest of it's been pretty lousy. Maybe these last few matches can save it. We've got, of course, our WWE Championship match and a very holy tag team matchup with Shawn Michaels and his almighty partner against Vince and Shane. But first, many words. Because.
Let it go.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
All right, Nation, we are back talking about Ric Flair's legacy and how it's been destroyed here at Backlash 2006. Exactly. You can read all about Ric Flair and many other wrestlers at PlaceToBeNation.com. Of course, the Vengeful previewing series has been brought back to life by Steve Riddle. You could check out, he looked at that RVD Shelton Benjamin match, and I think he went, let me check here, Sky, I think 3.5 stars. You can read his full review and take at PTBN, 3 stars, actually, for that match. So there you go. New Return of the Hacks, me and the Cowboy covering the last 2 weeks of the baseball season. Of course, we do a real-time chat back and forth and just kind of discuss what's going on. The show that you're currently worshiping lately, Sky, you're just, you know, big time in love with is Between the Sheets. Episode 43 went up today, May 10th to the 16th, 1990. So a lot going on there in the spring of 90. New Exile on Bass Street as well. Part 3 of the story of Continental Wrestling. So be sure to check that out, the three-part series of Exile looking at Continental. The debut edition of the Sellers Points podcast, Russell Sellers, joined by Greg Phillips, talking comics. We have a lot of new comics podcasts, by the way. We have the Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast. Their third episode went up, as well as our Seinfeld rewatch series, The Sponge, Season 7, Episode 9. New episode of Titans Wrestling, look at August to November of 1982. New Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, continuing their trek through Star Trek, looking at First Contact. So they've, of course, committed to reviewing every Star Trek movie up to the release of the new one this summer. Digging in the Crates is back, believe it or not.
Great.
Phil Schneider. Did you have something to say there?
I was going to say the next Spectacular will be coming out shortly, and I am on it. So.
There you go. Brad Willing continues to cover Ring of Honor TV, so check that out. Here's our other podcast debut for the comic section. Placement Nation's Conversation, Comics with Stephanie Holly. So you can check that with Todd Weber, of course, talking all kinds of topics. Our Vintage Vault Refresh series continues, Saturday Night's Main Event from October of 1990. And, of course, that will be our Volume 2 of our ebook will be all the Saturday Night's Main Events. We're quickly coming up on the finish there. So
you
can see the link to the ebook on the right-hand column of PTBN. Now available on Amazon, and it's completely free, so check it out. Mission Indie Possible podcast is back. Steve Willey, the host, with Brad and Jordan, looking at Brian Danielson's career in Chikara. Scott, of course, our network adventure, TNT from 7/23/84, Wednesday Walker on the Web, and everything else up at you each and every week, PlaceToBeNation.com, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, PlaceNumber2BeNation, Tumblr, Instagram, all the stuff. And like I mentioned before, we're in the middle of a gift season with graduations, communions, confirmations, you know, every other billionth Catholic holiday that you and the Knights celebrate. So, you know, the Feast of St. Chester and his 30th anniversary of his passing and the Hill of Damascus. We're celebrating with a party tonight.
St. Chester!
So be sure to, if you're going to buy gifts for that, you're buying something for Armento to celebrate the 75th anniversary of, you know, the Stop and Shop that opened in Norwalk.
I like St. Chester.
We're going to bless the Klondike bars in aisle 24. So. A lot going on. Follow that as well.
Chocolate crosses.
So if you're buying gifts for Armento to celebrate that, Amazon, you're shopping on Amazon, PlaceToBeNation.com. Click the Amazon banner on the right-hand side. It'll take you right there. You can do all your shopping. Nothing else needed. So there you go.
Oh, God. Those chocolate crosses. And by the way, like I said, as JR said, I mean, we love promoting the great podcast. And I'm listening to some of the back episodes of Between the Sheets. Great job by Zell and Bix and their rotating group of guests. The one I was just listening to today was listening to their back episodes. This was last year. It was the first week of September 1995. Of course, they picked that week because that was, of course, the debut of Nitro, so of course getting a lot of the good first hour of the show was about WCW and a lot of fascinating stuff involving TV. And I mean, that guy, I mean, Bix is amazing. I mean, he's, what is he, like 26 or something, and 26 or 27, and he I mean, that guy knows his stuff. Not just, I mean, when you're a wrestling fan and you know just, you know, stuff like pay-per-views and matches and guys and stuff, this guy knows contracts, and he remembers what this guy was making per year and who the station manager was at this TV station in Charlotte or whatever. I mean, the guy knows it. It's amazing. So definitely check it out. One of the many great podcasts we have here at PlaceToBeNation.com, Between the Sheets, KZ, Chris Zellner, and Bix. And they usually have a different guest on every episode to talk about the week that was at a certain time in history. So the one I was listening to was September of 95. It was very good. All right. Speaking of the history, let's get back to Lexington. And
backstage again.
Ugh, this is even worse.
Really? Yeah, I guess so.
And it was all right.
So Vince heals Candace. She has a cold, and she comes in and asks for forgiveness and to get healed. And Vince grabs her tits, and then she starts shaking like she's having an orgasm, and then she's healed. What's your problem with that?
Boy, Vince. Let's get to the match. All right. The match, pretty much our sequel to WrestleMania when Shawn and Vince put on a much better match, I think, than anybody anticipated, with Shawn winning. But everyone thought the feud would have been over, except when Vince flipped him the old Stone Cold Bird as he was being wheeled out on the stretcher, which we all knew meant that this feud was not over. And as JR is going to tell you, it certainly wasn't.
I am going to tell you that.
Are you watching No Holds Barred?
The movie or the match?
Both. On pay-per-view.
All right. So on 4-3, Vince McMahon appeared in a neck brace to confront Shawn Michaels. He told Shawn he only won at WrestleMania due to divine intervention and that Shawn could not win the war. He told Shawn that he would be teaming with God to take on Vince and Shane at Backlash. Vince took things to a whole other level a week later when he and Shane visited a church. Vince would spit holy water at Triple H, yelling at God, taking Dr. G's hat, reciting his own commandments, and then daring God to strike him down. When nothing happened, Vince claimed that God had forsaken Shawn Michaels. On 4/17, Vince kicked off Raw by talking about his religion, McMahonism, where he was the ruler of all sports entertainment. He claimed that he would force Shawn to bow down to him, but Michaels got the last laugh as he snuck through the crowd and drilled Vince with a super kick. Later that night, Michaels was wrestling Umaga, but he got knocked out by the Samoan Spike. Vince came to the ring, tied Shawn to the ropes, slid outside to grab a chair. As he tried to get back in, two random pyro explosions blocked his path. He freaked out and went up the ramp, but a wall of fire shot up and blocked him. On 4/24, Shawn is wrestling Shane when Vince interfered and hit Shawn with a ring bell. Shane would put Shawn through the announce table with an elbow as Vince said that God had abandoned Michaels yet again. So, Scott, you're a man of the cloth. Is this what God does when he's angry? Throws pyro down and puts up walls of fire?
To Vince? Yes.
Okay.
Particularly when you spit holy water.
I was just trying to figure out how true to life this was.
Well, if you spit holy water, I would expect you to get hit by lightning, but you're not that stupid. Mm. Vince, however, is a roided up mess right now, so clearly, yeah, I would.
Yeah.
I don't know.
According to many rumors, Vince was still working hard to get Bret Hart to do an angle.
He was working hard for other things, too.
Yeah, Bret penciled in to team with Shawn here instead of God. But when Bret rebuffed the advances, Vince turned to Plan B and put his obsession with bringing Bret back to bed, I think, for good here for a while. So, I mean, it seemed like if you look at it, that's, you know, it would have made sense if they did that. But obviously not. So, angle rolls on. I don't know. I still think it's been kind of fun. Vince and Church or something else. I thought they played it well. I like Shane being all freaked out while Vince is just going over the top. I mean, this is what I expect out of my megalomaniac, crazed guy trying to take over the world. Like, Vince is off the deep end. It's been chronicled since late 05. He's lost his fucking mind. And to me, yes, this is a guy that would go out to a church and challenge God to a match to prove he's better. Like, this is like heel 101 to me. Like, movie villain, asshole, prick. I don't know. That's why I thought it worked. Because it's so over the top. Just crazy. On the surface, it seems like a waste of Michaels, but like, he's been good enough to make him okay, and he's done all the work rate classics. Why not let him get involved with something like this for a bit? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I thought Vince and Shane, when they team, is always fun. I kind of liked the God entrance, where the hipster from heaven was the nickname they gave him. They play the holy music, and then it gets replaced by this funk music with Vince dancing around the ring. Vince makes the ref check God, and then he says the match is no holds barred. Michaels gets a huge pop. Michaels slaps Vince across the mouth when he's jawing at him, and then smacks them both around for a bit before diving onto Vince on the floor with a high cross body and Shane with a somersault senton. Shane and Vince double team for a bit, and then Shane works Shawn over with some jabs but gets backdropped on the steel grating. Michaels is flying around, snaps Shane back hard to the steel after running him into the set piece, and then he drives Vince off the stage with a cross body. I thought that was a great frantic attack by Michaels, who is clear he has to strike hard and fast in this handicap situation. So he's just going balls to the wall. And I like that spot where he throws Shane into the thing and then turns around and runs into Vince and dives off the off the stage to the floor.
Mm.
Shane comes back and drills Michaels in the face with a chair. Michaels gets busted open bad. Shane works over the cut and slugs Michaels down the ramp back to the ring. Shane just keeps punching away at the cut as Vince hobbles back down to the ring as well. Michaels dodges Shane's top rope elbow, but Vince whips Shawn with his belt and then punches his cut with it and smashes it with a trash can. Vince grabs the mic and starts shit-talking God, saying he walked out. Look at you made in your own image. He's a piece of crap. That made me laugh. The crowd is kind of uneasy. And looking back at it, maybe not the best city to do this thing in, you know, like the, you know, kind of Bible Belt area. This might have played better in, in, you know, Hipsterville, maybe up in New York or something like that. Or Seattle, something like that. I'm trying to think of a good godless city. Portland, maybe. Just anything but...
All of California?
Yeah, no. I was like San Francisco. You know, anything like the L.A., yeah. Anything but, you know, Bible Belt territory. So the crowd does seem a little bit uneasy. Vince goes for sweet chin music, but Michaels blocks it and then dodges Shane, who bashes Vince with a gruesome chair shot. I mean, just disgusting. Michaels hits an elbow and sweet chin music on Shane and then sweet chin music on Vince. So the crowd's just going apeshit now. Michaels does suck it again, like he did at Mania. Grabs two tables. Michaels sets them up on tables and then scales a giant ladder. But before he can jump, the squad comes out to ringside. So Sean turns and flies onto them. That was a cool spot. Spear Squad recovers and swarms Michaels and beats him down. They use a real cool swarming attack style. That was one thing I liked about the Spear Squad, when they jump people and they just like swarm and beat someone
right
down.
Yep.
Spear Squad does the group toss on Michaels to a table, and then they drag Vince on top for the win. I thought this was a really good heat builder, and the feud felt like it should be done, but I thought the finish made sense since they're going to continue it anyway. You know, Michaels' loss is covered, but they got beat up 7-on-1 in a no-holds-barred match. I don't think you can really blame him for the loss here. I thought it's a good brawl. It's not up to what we saw at Mania, but and it got a little long by the end. But I thought the story's been pretty heated. I don't know. I didn't hate this. And, like, I thought Vince buying in so heavily to the God stuff, to me, made it work. Because it was played to be over the top. It wasn't made to be serious. It was played to be this nut who's out of his mind trying to get revenge, just going to these absurd levels to bait his opponent. Like I said, to me, it's pure movie villain.
Okay. Point one, as movie villain as it was, and as much as he attempted to, I think the whole thing was dumb. This was your plan B. I can't get Brett, so let's make up an imaginary tag partner. Pretty idiotic. And again, you break my, you know, you give me grief and everybody goofs about my being a knight and being Catholic, but to be honest with you, the storyline didn't offend me. It takes a lot to offend me in that aspect. Maybe not spitting holy water is probably the smartest thing to do, but I just thought it was, I don't know, I just didn't think it was very creative. I thought it was kind of dopey. Now, if you're saying that using that dopiness was part of the gimmick, all right, I'll bite. I don't think so. I just think it was stupid. But if you think...
Wait.
But,
so the over-the-top, you don't think that as part of his gimmick that he's like crazy and over-the-top? You think it's all supposed to be played for serious, that Vince is really thinking God's in the corner of Shane and he's beating the both? You don't think it's played that he's this crazy maniac?
The only way I agree with it is Shane no-selling it, like the no-selling earlier in the show. He hates Sean, but clearly as he's looking at his father.
Yeah,
he thinks
he's nuts. Why does that make it serious? He's saying, yeah, Vince is fucking insane.
All right, now if Brett – let me ask you this. If Brett did say yes, how the fuck were they going to do this then? Was he still going to be crazed?
He's been crazy. He's been crazy for all these years. No, he's been crazy since like 98 or whatever. I mean, he's always been a nut. But it's been more so since it started with when he was pulling foreign objects out of Jim Ross's ass in September. You know what I mean? Like,
which was mentioned, which by the way, he did refer to.
Yeah. Fuck you, Dr. Honey. Yeah, it's been crazy. He's been over the top. He's been nuts since then. Like, that's been his gimmick since like the fall, that he's like lost his fucking mind, you know, threw Eric Bischoff in a dumpster. You know what I mean? Like, he's just nuts. He's gone off the deep end, and it's, you know, he wanted to celebrate Montreal with Sean. And then, you know, like all this stuff is portrayed that he's lost his mind. The marching to when the Saints go marching in, you know what I mean? Like, everything is just over the top.
Yeah. I could see that. I would have been careful because I know he seems to think that he could get away with everything. I think going into the church and screaming and the spitting stuff was probably – I'm just looking out for the product. What, they're not allowed to be – let's not get into this discussion. But
it's all right, so what's the difference between that and like a movie that goes into a church and does a scene or a TV show? Like, who are they really getting in trouble with? It's played as a gag. It's not real. He's not really going to church and smiting God.
Well, I could see the going into the church itself and screaming. I mean, you can do that. Everybody does that. But I mean, maybe it wasn't holy water. Maybe I'm thinking too cinematic at it. But in any event.
Wait, so your beef is that it's actually holy water?
No, my beef is the storyline's stupid. Can we just leave it at that? Why are you trying to make me change my mind? Can't you just let it go?
We're just having a discussion. Why? So I shouldn't give my side of it because I'm not trying to change your
mind.
No, see,
that's not the point.
We're debating
the
point.
No, the point is the storyline's stupid. Simple as that. My opinion is storyline stupid.
I'm trying to dig into the reasons why you think it's stupid. You just keep saying it's stupid, and every point you give me, I just don't think is a valid point.
That's your opinion. Okay. I mean, the point is the best plan B, he must have thought Brett was an idiot then. If Brett
I don't
was
think
that...
he ever really bought into Brett. It may have been a plan A, plan B thing, but I don't think he ever really thought he was going to get him. If he didn't get him when he was in the city at Mania, you know?
I would have just had it a handicap and then if the Spirit Squad beat the hell out of him.
Yeah,
he could. If they really wanted to put him in the corner, but to use, I don't know, whatever. I'm not offended religiously. I'm offended.
Well, I feel like you are a little bit.
No, now you're just starting a whole new debate.
No, I'm not. Your mention of like maybe it wasn't really holy water to me made it seem like you saw that as like a thing. Like you said, you know, you're looking.
Well, I didn't say that was a thing. I'm saying I'm thinking more of the. I'm getting my wires crossed here because I'm more thinking that the storyline.
That whole promotion, the Grand Knight, may be in trouble if people hear this. But go ahead.
Well, this is your fault. Apparently, you just want me to quit and become a Satanist. But the fact remains is
true.
That's you. But the fact, even though you are a saint, there's no Saint Chester. I don't know anybody named Chester.
Saint Justin. But, the Feast of Saint Justin is actually coming up. I think it's June 1st.
Oh, you already know that, don't you? Fuck! I was hoping you never knew that. That the feast of your saint is on my birthday. Now I'm fucked. Now I just got to be Jewish or something. Yeah. In any event,
I always find a way to trump you, my friend.
Yeah, great. Might as well just be dead. I'll just go with God then. I'll follow the light down the fucking aisle and
then.
I don't
know the way you're talking to the show. You may be in trouble.
Maybe I am. Bix, who was the station manager in Lexington, Kentucky? Bix. All right. Let's get out of this point.
No, because no, no. You were headed to something. I want to hear.
If he never really thought Brett was going to be in this slot, then why bother? Why bother even trying? Just stick with the God thing, which still was dumb. Because let's go this. I just opened up another thing.
I'll say this flat out. I thought the stuff in the church was like some of the funniest Vince stuff they've ever done. Because it was so over the top. And
because Sean was actually involved. I'm just a dopey fan. Sean was actually involved in it. Yeah, and Sean even said in the interview earlier in the show, Sean said, I don't like thrusting my Christian values on people.
Yeah, so he never does that.
And what, because he has crosses on his t-shirts? But
they should use this as a theme. That was awesome. Shane in the church looking up at the sky when Vince was like calling out God was awesome. Like just waiting for the lightning to strike.
Yeah, like I think Shane was even better during the whole thing than Vince was. Because Shane almost disarmed it like he's almost telling – I think Vince anticipated if there was any going to be kind of no pun intended backlash if, you know, evangelicals or whatever were going to say something. It's almost like Shane was the disclaimer. I'll say that. Like Shane was almost the disclaimer like, don't take this seriously. He's just out of his fucking mind.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was played – you just made my whole point. That it was played as a goof that Vince was out of his mind and that Shane is there to say – yeah, well, I mean, this guy's nuts, you know? Like, I know he's nuts.
I'm just saying not only for storyline purposes, but for, like, real life.
Sure. I don't think they give a shit about that.
Advertiser purposes, but.
I don't think they care. Their whole explanation and rationale is always, hey, my pal, we're just making movies. You know what I mean? Like, that's, to them, they're no different than, like, you know, the movie Dogma, shooting up a friggin' church or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it's just, they don't see it as any different than that. Like, it's, we're a show. We're telling stories, and this story is that this crazy guy is harassing this guy that's, you know, deeply religious, and he's taunting him by going to church and mocking God. Like, to me, that was what the whole story was. And to me, that's what their explanation would be.
Right. Point two. Glad Let's get out of this. Point two. I don't give a fuck anymore. Point two. I know you need to feel that in your mind, but just let's move on.
I need to feel it. I just know it.
Point two. The violence and the blood, as you mentioned, is starting to get a little out of hand now. We'll see it in the main event, too, but Sean was just a bleeding like crazy again. I don't know where this suddenly is coming from. Where everybody just starts to start bleeding like crazy.
It's not everybody. It's him and Triple H.
He was just as violent as, well, Foley and Edge at Mania.
Yeah, but I mean,
But my point is, I think that it was getting a little out of hand now. This was much more violent than it really needed to be. Why did this have to be No Holds Barred? We just had a No Holds Barred match at Mania. We need another No Holds Barred match? This should have just been a straight up tag. And I think the histrionics would have been even funnier. But then they couldn't use the Spirit Squad, so it's a cheap way to get them in the match, just like they did at Mania. It was pretty much the same match, except with goofy religious storyline and Vince Shane in the match, quote, officially. Otherwise, it's the same match as Mania. And point three, I think this match actually would have been better. I think the God stuff at the beginning is fine, but then they did it again with him leaving, and I think that whole gap in the middle kind of ruined the flow of the match. Could have been, it could have tightened that up a little bit, considering they had this whole long dopey segment next before the main event.
Yeah, they definitely, I'll give you that. I think it definitely could have been a shorter match. They didn't need to go as in-depth as they did, or as long as they did. You know, 20 minutes was a bit long for this one. I mean, when you look at the rest of the card, actually, for once, there's not another match I could say, like, oh, they could have given time here. Like, the only other two matches that deserve time, got it. Maybe the main event, actually, it did feel a little short at some points, but, it's tough. Yeah, it's tough. I didn't feel like it dragged when I was watching it. I'll say that.
It did. Except that middle part when he does the whole, God, come back. I mean, there was no need for that.
Yeah. You didn't think it was like Warrior Savage with talking to his hands?
Yeah, but back then, though, well, I guess it depends on your point of view. If it's part of Vince being a fucking out of his gore, then yeah, I guess so. But I'm talking about, but that's not, has nothing to do with the storyline or offending anybody. It just made the match longer than it needed to be. It's just, I'm just looking at it from a match perspective. But otherwise, I mean, it was okay. Again, using Spirit Squad as your muscle, whether anybody took it seriously or not. And JR was like so offended. They actually bleeped. When did this ever happen? They actually bleeped JR's vulgarity. He actually, I think he, I don't know if he actually said bullshit or not, but.
Well, I think they felt like, I think he felt like he needed to way oversell the story because of their
power. Right.
I mean, he probably meant a lot of it. So he was like in overdrive mode all for this whole feud. You know what I mean? Like, he was way over the top for all of it. We started Mania in here. I like Spirit Squad as the muscle because there's five of them beating up one guy. Like, it works. Yeah, they're male cheerleaders and they're kind of small, but when you got five guys swarming one, it's pretty effective. And I like that finisher where they throw the guy in the air and smack him down.
Yes, I like it too. I like it too. Well, Spirit Squad might as well enjoy it now because in a short period of time, they're not going to get anything.
Right.
So it's not going to be fun for them. So, all right. So Vince and Shane win this bizarre tag team match to keep the storyline going. And it gets, how long? 1 second shy of 20, which is definitely more than it needed to be. So, all right. If Vince wanted to be really nuts, that should have been the entrance theme.
Yeah, so I said before, definitely. That would have been awesome.
You should have played that with the light going up the ramp. That would
have
been funny.
Have Norman Greenbaum come out, play his guitar. Is he alive or is he dead?
Oh, I have no idea. Let me look. I don't know if he was alive. Yeah, tell us about the about this segment.
Useless to me, this knowledge. He was still alive. He's 73.
Why am I supposed to know how old Norman Greenbaum is at the top of my fucking head?
He's a music guy.
That's it's Norman Greenbaum. You're not talking about, like, you know, 60s, Led Zeppelin.
Isn't that what, I mean, that's your jams.
Are you drunk tonight? Greek.
See more clearly than I've ever seen, Scott.
Yeah, because you follow Vince's
McMahonism.
My eyes
have been opened.
You're following the light.
My eyes have been opened.
All right.
Stuff your spaghetti dinners down your throat. All right. Matt Stryker comes out for a classroom lesson. I think, have we talked about Stryker yet? I don't even know. But he was we'll talk about it at some point. But yes, he was a New York City school teacher that was moonlighting as a wrestler. And then was using sick days to go wrestle. So he got fired, and then they signed him for the publicity, and he was sticking around for a while. So he ripped on the local sports maladies and Kentucky being full of stupid people. And he says, I have a representative of the state of Kentucky. I'm going to bring him out to talk to him now. And he brings out Eugene, who's amazingly somehow still hanging around here and still doing this character. Stryker says this is proof that you shouldn't marry your cousin. And then he asks Eugene to spell his name and said he writes Matt Stryker loves poop on the board. I thought this started funny initially, but it really got lame fast by the time he was making poop jokes on the chalkboard. Stryker rips Eugene's grammar on the board, which I thought was funny for a chuckle. And then Eugene picks his nose and is about to eat it, but Stryker stops him and rips him for it. And then Eugene shoves the booger in Stryker's mouth and stuns him. And this was a real waste of time.
Otto, terrible. So stupid.
Plug a match in here if you want to eat up time or cool the crowd after that last match. You don't need, I mean,
eat up time, not boogers.
Yeah, right. Eat time. There you go. There's your new shirt. Eat time, not boogers.
Eat time, not boogers.
But, I mean, it was, yeah. I mean, Stryker was funny at some points, but just overall, it was just dumb. And I don't know. Like, aren't you, like, do we need to see Eugene as playing the mentally challenged guy eating boogers? Like, is that our, you know, that's like one step above Jim's Nerf, you know, sitting at the table making.
I knew you were going to bring that
up. A diaper. I mean, it's not that far, but, you know, like, we laugh at that as being over the top. Like, this wasn't that far from it. Oh, he's, you know, he's retarded, making me eat a booger. Like, you know, it's, I don't know. It's stupid.
You should put that in the new open. He's retarded, making me eat a booger. That'll be the new open in episode 5.
You're worried about the Vince spitting water in the air, getting people in trouble. I'm putting that in the open. Anyway.
Eat boogers in church? What? No, we're not cross-promoting this. All right. Finally. Time after a lot of crap.
I like to picture the whole montage as a music video of your life with him. And, like, this part, like, there's this dramatic wipe, and it's you guys dancing at a ball in front of all these people. Like, that's where I picture this song being at the end.
His hair was in good shape in this in the build on these Raws. So
to replace the Prel for him in the shower.
All right. Our main event, the WWE Championship on the line. Your champion has... Your champion, still John Cena, after his, well, many consider, well, maybe not an upset, but somewhat stunning win at WrestleMania. And as we begin on the next night, do we have the inevitable rematch that we always have when Triple H loses? But usually he loses the title.
It's mandated that I get 17 more matches.
So, what twists and turns have we had to get to this point?
What would you have done if God fought Triple H? That would have been like just implosion.
God would not have allowed Ric Flair to job Dumont. No, whatever. I don't feel like talking about that anymore. All right, how do we get here?
On 4-3, Triple H and Edge confronted John Cena, demanding title matches. Cena suggested the two compete to determine who would be the number one contender, but Edge said he was in no shape for singles matches. He then suggested that the two team up to face Cena, and Cena accepted the challenge. Hunter and Edge would win the match after Hunter planted Cena with a pedigree. The next week, it was announced that Cena would face both men in a triple threat match at the pay-per-view, and that Hunter and Cena would now team up to face Edge in a handicap match later that night. Cena and Hunter won the match when Cena hooked Edge in the STFU. After the match, Hunter hit Edge with the pedigree, and Cena dropped Hunter with an FU. On 4-17, the cycle was complete as Triple H was on the short end of the handicap match. Edge would get the win for his team and planted Hunter with a spear. And then after the match, Hunter hit Cena with a sledgehammer. The next week, Eugene ate boogers in a handicapped match. And that
was it. Sounds like something Stern would book.
All right. Howard?
Yeah. David? He did a gag with boogers. He's probably done many gags with boogers.
Daniel Stern?
No. He grew up to be...
one of the Wet Bandits.
Exactly. And he was Kevin Arnold.
That's right. So this is a good main event. You get Edge right back in the picture for the title post-Mania. Another chance for Cena to prove himself. Edge still carrying his star aura. Lita's a little tamed down here, I thought. She still was, you know, busting out, but not as obtuse.
Not as busting out. Not as busting out. Beauty and the breast. Yeah, no, they weren't as busting out.
Triple H feels a bit out of steam, I thought, in this role. Do you agree, as the aficionado, that he's been doing this gimmick for almost 4 years now? A lot of title programs, a lot of similar stuff. Did you feel that, you know, we kind of know it's coming, but did you feel a change was really needed here?
Yeah. I think that's why he was getting cheered.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, definitely.
He's been doing the same thing for so long now.
Yeah, and I think Edge has kind of supplanted him in the role of top, nasty, underhanded heel. And through Cena's, you know, boos that he's getting from the male fans, Triple H is almost becoming a de facto face. So I think fans were due for a change. And, you know, hearing the rumors on the sheets, like we talked about earlier, and, you know, the extraneous crotch chops at Mania, et cetera, I think they knew it was coming. So I think the cheers were coming even more. But yeah, 4 years, it's easier to stay a face longer than it is a heel, depending on who you are. It's hard to be a heel for longer than a few years. And when you're somebody like Triple H who's been very good at both, usually there's a cycle, and he was due. He was definitely due. But I agree with you 100%. Very tired as the, oh, another title match. Oh, he's going to be a jerk. But we don't like either guy in the ring in this time. So this is almost a different – if you look back at all the title matches, Mania and post-Mania, and, you know, Benoit and Shawn, they get cheered. And, you know, Batista, he's getting cheered. But now you got guys that fans are kind of 50-50 on, so – you know, there are some Hunter cheers. So it is due for a change because of the way that the roster is starting to kind of...
Enough is enough.
Evolve. No pun intended. So
time for a change.
Time for a change.
So Cena booed as he runs through his offense here. We start with him and Triple H trading punches as Edge bails to the floor. Edge reaches in and breaks up a pin. Hunter gets a flurry to cheers, but Edge breaks up his pin too. And I liked Edge just enjoying the slugfest, but then he gets yanked in the ring and mowed down by both guys. Cena knocks Edge to the floor and both rattle him out there using the announce table. Edge finally turns the tide when he goes to work on Hunter, but Cena gets involved and yanks Hunter hard to the floor and hits a top rope big splash on Edge for two. That was kind of cool. Cena goes for the five knuckle shuffle, but Lita yanks the rope down and Cena crashes to the floor. Triple H meets him and shoots him into the steps. Hunter snaps Edge down with a spinebuster for a two count and then grabs a sleeper. But Edge pushes out and gets his own sleeper until Cena comes in and hoists both guys on his shoulder for an FU. But Edge slips off and spears Cena while Hunter was still on his shoulders. That was another nice spot. Match spills back outside where Edge slingshots Hunter into the post and busts him open. Pretty good. Hunter's just pouring blood here. Edge spikes him to the table and DDTs him on it. Edge comes back and cuts down Cena with a dropkick and aggressive strikes. Having taken over the match, Cena pops up and comes back with an STFU, but Hunter reaches in and bashes Cena with the mic. Hunter then destroys Edge with a nasty chair shot to the head, knocking him into the crowd. Cena gets the STFU on Hunter in the ring, but Hunter powers up and gets the rope while he's just pouring blood. Good sympathy building here for Hunter, who's kind of becoming a tweener with Edge, like you said, kind of becoming the top heel. Hunter reverses the FU into the pedigree, but Cena flips out and goes back to the STFU. Cena breaks a hold and Edge comes back in, but ref gets bumped. Edge gets trapped up top, and Cena climbs up and preps for an FU. But Hunter catches him, and they do a big Tower of Doom spot. That was another cool spot they did. Lita comes in with a chair, but Hunter catches her with a spine buster. That gets a big pop. Hunter grabs a chair but doesn't use it. He drops it, and you think, oh, is he kind of doing the right thing? And then, no, he just grabs a sledgehammer instead. Hunter, who's just got super gory blood. Blade Job you don't really hear much about or think much about, but it's really gory.
It is.
Really bad. He gets speared by Edge before he can use the hammer. Hunter recovers and knocks Edge to the floor. He goes to the pedigree, but Cena reverses it into a jackknife roll-up and gets the pin, beating Hunter back-to-back, submission and pinfall. So big, big for Cena here. Hunter smacks both guys with a sledgehammer after the match, does suck it, and then walks off. I thought this was a strongman event. I thought it was really well-worked and executed. I thought the heat was great. The crowd was super into it. Another key win for Cena. But are the top contenders, Scott, starting to dwindle for him? You know, we kind of referenced it earlier. Hunter's kind of done now. Edge... he's already beaten him. He's still lingering. You kind of look at the rest of the landscape on Raw, and who is there for him to feud with? God?
Well, Vince would have – I mean, the writers would have Cena beat him anyway. He could – I like to see him trying to FU a spotlight. That would be interesting. Point one, smart to get Edge back into the title picture, though, because I don't – I mostly agree with you, but I don't think Edge is cooked by any stretch.
No, he's not cooked. But I mean, I'm just saying, who is there that's fresh that Cena hasn't really beat? I mean, he's beat him clean once. So, you know, he's got that win over him. Like, we don't have that guy left right now. I mean, Sean, but he's tied up. So there's really no one else that's, like, around that's, like, an ready-made feud. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think Edge is done either in that spot.
Let me ask you this. Well, now he's a babyface, so I was going to say Carlito. Mm. But he's a babyface, so I don't know how they would have thought of that. I mean, you could have done it anyway. But good to get Edge immediately back. We didn't want a Hunter-Cena singles rematch. That would have been stupid, unnecessary. Another singles match. That would have, you know, what would you have done there? Just have him get pinned? Makes no sense. Needed to have Edge back in the fold, particularly after a great showing at WrestleMania. It logically makes sense. Point two, I give Cena credit because, and you mentioned it when we were reading some of the backstage tidbits during the Sutton Report, that regardless of the boos he's getting, he's kind of plugging along. And I almost saw him kind of switch things up tonight. He did like a Jimmy Snuka top rope splash kind of thing you don't really see from him. And I'm giving Cena a lot of credit for kind of trying to freshen up his work rate or freshen up his moveset, make him seem a little different.
Yeah, he definitely
kind
does.
Of bring some different looks, which I applaud him for. I think he looked fantastic in that aspect. We saw a lot of things out of Cena that you normally don't see. So I enjoyed that. And the win was not a surprise. And point three, I honestly was, you know, it's funny you mentioned contenders because honestly, JR, I thought Edge was going to win this match. I thought Edge was going to win the title. I think this was a way to reward Edge. You needed to give Cena the WrestleMania win because you're trying to, keep him elevated and legitimize him as a main event face of the company guy. Having said that, when I first saw this, I thought that this match was booked so Edge could get the belt back after having to job it so badly at the Rumble. I thought this was a way to get Edge the title back and kind of have him feud with Cena throughout, or, you know, have him have the belt throughout the spring because of the fact that RVD had the briefcase. You weren't thinking that RVD was going to cash it in on Cena because don't forget at the time, JR, we really didn't know how a face would handle the briefcase. If he was going to handle the briefcase the way Edge handled it the year before, right, you would have thought Edge would be the champion as a heel. And RVD was going to cash in on him as a face.
Yeah, I didn't really think of RVD as a potential contender. That's a good one.
So,
I mean, Flair could have been if they booked him, right?
Of course. But, you know, of course they had to destroy him, and now he's just trash. Mm. So there you go.
I mean, you can see the long game with Umaga. Not ready yet.
No. And it's good, because eventually when we do get him in that role, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. So I thought originally Edge was going to win this match. Because I thought this was a way for him to get the belt back after having a job it so badly at the Rumble, just so you can get Triple H and Cena. All right, well, now that match is out of the way. Let's give the belt back to Edge. That's what I thought originally. Mm. Am I upset Cena won? No, not at all. Hunter was definitely cooked, and we're done. And Edge didn't get pinned, which obviously was by design to keep him, you know, the hotter heel. So overall, I thought this was great. I thought it was a highlight. I think this match was the highlight of the show. Just a skoosh more than Shelton and RVD. I would have to say the last time Hunter bled that bad, probably the Cell with Batista. He bled pretty bad in that match. So I would say it's been at least 10 months since Hunter bled that bad. But that was a sick blade job. I mean, you're talking like Eddie, Judgment Day 04 levels of gross. Mm-hmm. Did you think this match was better than Shelton RVD?
Yeah, this would be my match of the night, and match of the year so far. So,
yeah.
One show in. And then I'd say Shelton was the second best. Yeah, I like this a lot. I thought all three guys worked well together. And this was the one where I thought, you know, maybe they could have done even a little bit more time. I think maybe they could have taken 3 or 4 minutes off Vince and put it here. Because it felt like it almost ended a little quick. Like, we didn't get a lot. There could have been more to it.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at what? I just lost the screen. Hold on. What was it, 17? I think 17 minutes. What was the total?
Yeah.
17 and a half.
Yeah.
17 and a half. Yeah, like I said, you probably could have hacked some of the, you know, off the Shane you know, Vince, Sean stuff. That didn't need to be 20 minutes. Maybe got rid of the booger-eating dreck. So you could have given this a few more minutes. It's a main event. It's fine to go over 20. You had three guys that can go over 20. So that's fine. I definitely agree with that. Mm-hmm. But I really did think Edge was going to win this match. I thought this was the whole, you know, Cena needed to win Mania for his own for the legacy at the moment, face of the company, et cetera, et cetera. But now we're back to storylines. Edge. Triple H is going to eat the pin either way. Mm-hmm. I could easily have seen Edge spearing Hunter or Cena giving Hunter the FU and then Edge, you know, typical heel shit and triple threats and, you know, Cena chucks him or Edge chucks him out of the ring and steals the pin, that kind of thing. That's what I thought. And I was thinking of RVD in that sense. But again, at this moment in the company, you don't know what's – I mean, big things are happening in the next, you know, 3 months. So obviously we get some twists and turns. So John Cena retains his WWE Championship in a great match, triple threat match over Triple H and Edge. Well, there you have it. There is Backlash 2006. And honestly, other than RVD Shelton and the main event, this show really blows. It's not good.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, I was trying to be optimistic, JR. I like being optimistic for the listeners, but facts are facts. I mean, this is not great. Why, though? Why is it not great, do you think? Is it the roster?
Yeah.
Is the roster a problem?
Well, it's a weird mix of like a bunch of short matches and then three long ones, which isn't always awful, but yeah, it's just, I mean, when you look at the structure of the card, like, you know, the opener was never going to be good. It just wasn't when you look at who's involved. And then Umaga Flair, for better or worse or whatever, you know, was probably a, you know, was meant to be a squash. The women's match ended prematurely. So, I mean, when you look at the matches up and down, a lot of the, there was never really going to be a chance for a strong undercard.
Right.
And you needed to make this, like, better than it ended up being, you needed Shelton RVD to be a little bit better than it was, you know? And you needed the Vince stuff to maybe be a little bit better of a brawl than it was. And this to maybe be just a little bit better than it was. It's like, you know, it's just everything that was needed to take it up a notch didn't really come through.
Mm. I'm looking forward to the next vault because after all that we talked about, at least Cena was a stable champion, etc. Coming off that whole, this whole mess of Rey Mysterio, I'm looking forward to seeing what SmackDown's first pay-per-view out of Mania brings, because that title situation is a hell of a lot more unstable than Cena is on Raw. So looking forward to our next vault when we have Judgment Day and see what SmackDown can come out of with that weird kind of shoehorned champion situation. So, but that's it. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope we don't want to dissuade you. If you think the show's good, throw it on and give it a shot.
I don't think many do. So, all right. So our best match, we'll say, is the main event. And let's keep track of the worst match, too. For now, Big Show came.
Okay. All right. I will do that. It'll be Google Doc. Yep.
All right. So our plan for right now is to be back next week in our usual slot with Judgment Day. Splot. 06. That's the plan for now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll go from there. We'll take it week to week. So we're going to wrap up. Be sure to check out PlayStation.com. Everything goes with it. Scott, I believe you got a main event this week.
I do. Wednesday night, I'll be joined by my favorite person on the planet, Mr. Ben Morris, and J. Arsenio D'Amato, as we will preview Extreme Rules this Sunday from Newark. And I might have a couple of new segments to discuss Wednesday night, so I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Awesome. All right.
Have fun.
So that's it. We're out. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Everyone take care and remember.
Is there going to be a Where in the World? You know how it used to be Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Is there going to be a Where in the World is Kevin Kelly?
Yes.
You're going to be dressed like Waldo? Is he going to be dressed like Waldo?
Maybe he'll already dress like Waldo. But hopefully we'll track him down soon and get him back on track. The Kevin Kelly Show nor the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, neither are dead. It was just a convergence of issues that occurred at the same time. Kevin with a lot of travel, Will with computer issues. Hoping both get settled soon into the summer, so we'll be back at full strength. I'm enjoying my little vacation, though, I'll say that much. It's been a nice little break for me. But anyway, so there's that. We'll be back next week. Honor the spirit and the sky.
Absolutely. St. Chester. Sounds like cheap coffee or cookies or something. Really? St. Chester's on sale, 2 for $6.
Sounds like a shit town in Minnesota somewhere. St. Chester, Minnesota.
Rose on Golden Girls. Back in St. Chester.